sugar.
You know, my wish for you is that someday you'll be able to look out this window and see that sunrise.
Darling.
As the clouds break and the sun comes up over Lake Michigan. You know what that makes me think of? I think we should just dance. Let's do it right now. Go.
Goodbye, baby. Yes, I'm going. Yes, I'm going. Goodbye, baby. Yes, I'm going. Yes, I'm going.
Well, you know, my throat is still a little, you know. So, I'll still do some whining today, a little bit of complaining, but probably less than yesterday.
We wouldn't want it any other way, though.
Right?
Yeah, actually, we would.
It's part of my charm. Hey, when do you leave for Stanford?
Friday, during the show.
Oh, what time's the plane? Because I should probably be on this trip. Northwestern opens in Stanford on Saturday.
Yeah, I think you should probably talk to the coach about that.
Okay. But you'll be with us Friday morning for the majority of the show.
For most of the show,
okay.
Yes.
All right. We're into football season. Exciting time of year for you.
It's a great time of year. Love this time of year.
Do you get pumped up the first few days?
I get pumped up all season.
But I mean, right now,
right now, thinking, yes.
Can you not think of anything but that first game?
No, I think of you guys, my coworkers. I think of my family, but then I think of football.
Wow. I can't even believe it. I'm a new coworker and I'm making the list.
See, how about it? Now, of course, it's a big pile of BS.
Dave is genuinely a nice guy.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree. Do you know how many years it's been? You've been doing Northwestern football?
I think this is 30.
Wow.
30.
Wow.
Did you know the broadcast booth is named after him?
Oh, wow. I know he's a big deal because I remember he was talking about the parade. Deal.
Yeah, it's the Dave Ennett Memorial Broadcast Booth.
It's a memorial?
Yeah, well.
Isn't that a little early?
Do it early, yeah.
No, it's the Dave Ennett Broadcast Booth. Pretty cool.
Dave is a major purple deal.
You should have G out there sometime this season in the booth to
see you
doing the game.
Oh, right. I thought you said for me to help him. That might be nice.
No, but you're welcome anytime. You guys all are. You know that.
But Dave doing the game is completely different than Dave here.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you know how here he's sitting and he's banging on the keyboard and stuff? Out there, his arms are flailing. He poked his play-by-play or his color guy's eyes out. Yeah, because his hands are flying.
Vicious.
Yeah.
And one time, G, we actually got to go out and field and do some. What did we do? Did we kick or throw?
We threw footballs really poorly.
Oh, it was awful. Yeah. It was. We were so bad. They never had us back.
I thought you had to catch punts in the wind.
That was another time.
That was a different one.
How'd that go?
That didn't go well. And then there was a half-court shot.
Yes. How'd that go?
Not great. I have been booed 3 times by massive crowds at Northwestern.
Did they win the game, though? Like, were you an inspiring...
I don't know. I just went to corner.
Now, not the time you were kicking punts, and all of the entire Michigan State squad was watching you.
Yeah.
We need to do something non-physical, like in a parade or something, where we can just wave. We can't do anything physical.
Coming up on today's show, Kid of the Week, Joe Walsh is running for president. He got fired yesterday, by the way, from his radio show.
You predicted that.
Yeah, well, it wasn't a big surprise.
Yeah, he can't do that, right?
No, that would be a very big conflict. Mm-hmm. Ross Cochran will be on the show later. I'm talking about his charity.
Do you know who that is?
Let It Be Us. That'd be my son. and of course, we'll do a Most Valuable Person on the Planet as well. We'll get to the top six at six in a moment.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
Get your kicks. Get your kicks.
With the top six at six, sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men.
I heard, anybody watch the VMAs last night? Video Music Awards? Sebastian Maniscalco, friend of the program, apparently ate it at the beginning.
I didn't catch the
monologue
beginning.
Up front. So if you guys text me and tell me if I'm right or wrong about that, I'm seeing stories all over this morning that he was not popular.
Our own Doma Tipango was there, I saw.
Yes.
Him on Facebook in his flashy outfit.
Very handsome.
He works for MTV. He has to be there.
Yeah.
It's a work night.
Fantastic.
Text number 312-981-7200. I also have a text question coming up. First, this. U.S. Representative Krishnamoorthy, who represents the West and Northwest suburbs, on Monday became the 10th Democrat in Illinois' congressional delegation to back impeachment proceedings against Republican President Donald Trump. Welcome, Raja. What took so long? Next, as the Amazon rainforest fires continue, climate scientists fear a tipping point could be near. Scientists say if too many trees are removed, Earth's climate could lose a critical buffer. Scientists fear part of the Amazon could pass a critical threshold and transform from a lush rainforest into a dry, woody grassland. And that could bring catastrophic consequences, not only for the people in South America, but for everybody around the world. The Amazon is a key component of the Earth's climate system. It holds about a quarter as much carbon as the entire atmosphere, and single-handedly absorbs about 5% of all the CO that we emit each year. The Brazilian government has said it will reject an offer of aid from G7 countries to help tackle the fires in the Amazon rainforest after initially saying on Sunday that they were open to the idea. They're now saying it's too political. And by the way, they've got a lunatic president, too. And yes, I meant to say, too.
Mm-hmm.
And he is, was it Bolsonaro, I believe? He is saying that they just want to colonize Brazil, they being the G7 countries. No, we'd like not to give up 20% of the Earth's oxygen.
And, Steve, if I might interject, it's worth, again, noting that the world is at a tipping point on climate change anyway, even without the Amazon fire. So we're in a dire situation.
Here's the thing. Everybody who is diehard against the idea of climate change, and initially, years ago, I was as well. Would you come around?
What? You were?
Out of the gate, yeah. Because
really?
This whole idea politically that we could tackle it seemed ridiculous. And you can't fix it, but you can certainly start working on it. You can fix parts of it. You can start working in proper directions. So we can't wait. We can't sit back and wait, and we can't sit here and watch while the rainforest burns.
And we can't keep having an argument about whether or not it's man-made or not. Okay, let's leave that aside, and we're going to have to start coming up with emergency plans to deal with it, and we're not doing that either.
I think the hard part is really being able to compensate countries that aren't as developed as we are and going in and actually telling them, you know,
what to do and how to
exactly.
do it.
Exactly.
Well, that's what's
like,
going on in Brazil.
Yeah.
Or just the very basic situation. Let's say if scientists are right and we're going to see sea level rise and our coastal cities are going to be flooded, where do all those people go?
Chicago.
Anybody thinking about that yet?
Two-thirds of the rainforest lies in the territory and boundaries of Brazil, and that's why they have so much say over this. But Bolsonaro is going to have to come around. Because, you know, here's the thing, Steve, G, everybody. When this goes bad or worse and it starts to affect people, the people that were loudest against climate change, all they have to do is go, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't know. I guess I was wrong. Well, that's not going to fix anything. We need to get on board now. Some of the greatest scientific minds in the world, including Tom Skilling. Tom Skilling was a doubter initially.
Well, I mean, we have a responsibility for people that aren't in a place to be able to think about climate change. We're lucky enough that we are rich enough to and developed enough to think about that, and we've got to do that for countries that aren't as developed.
But we never thought we'd be in this position where you have to tell another country to not do a stupid thing to their own people and therefore to the rest of the world.
Well, yeah, because the farmers are just thinking, I need to put food on my table.
Right.
I got to burn this, you know, this part down so I can actually farm it, or I can raise cattle on it, because I got to take care of my family.
And you think we have a border problem now? Wait until all of the people who are displaced by whatever climate problems start happening and people start rushing to places where there's clean water.
Next, a harsh winter is coming, according to the Farmer's Almanac. The Almanac released its extended winter weather forecast, predicting a polar coaster winter. Polar coaster, that's like roller coaster with polar.
That's the first time I've ever heard that.
It's going to make for plenty of freezing temperatures and snowfall in most of the country. The coldest temps are expected in late January, which will affect millions of people living in the northern plains all the way to the Great Lakes. Hey, wait a minute. Isn't that a Great Lake right out there?
Yeah.
Temperatures in the plains areas could dip as low as minus 40 degrees, according to the Almanac. And all I can tell you is if you're living in those areas, leave those areas immediately. You've been warned by the Farmer's Almanac. Next.
Dreading it.
A judge Monday found Johnson & Johnson responsible for fueling Oklahoma's opioid crisis, ordering the healthcare company to pay the largest fine so far, $572 million. Not a fine, a settlement, $572 million to remedy the devastation brought by the epidemic on the state and its residents. Not going to bring anybody back, but it will go towards stopping and stemming the tide of destruction that has continued there. Next. How about Rob Stafford? Rob Stafford from NBC5 filed a lawsuit on Friday alleging the toxic chemicals emitted by the Willowbrook-based Sterigenics facility caused a rare blood disease that he was diagnosed with in 2017. You know, they thought he was going to die. He was in significant trouble and in treatment for a long time. And he must have been off the air for close to a year, wasn't he?
I knew he was sick, but I didn't quite know what it was about.
Staffer and an anchor at NBC5, lead male anchor at NBC5, unwittingly inhaled ethylene oxide, he says, that was emitted by Sterigenics during the 24 years he lived in Hinsdale and the nearly two decades he was a member of a workout facility in Burr Ridge.
Wow.
He, you know, back in the NBC days, he lived here when he was running around the world for NBC. He was flying out of here. You know Stafford? He's a good guy.
I don't know him personally.
Good guy. One of my favorites.
Next, barbers and stylists in Austin came together on Monday to make sure kids in the hood are looking fresh for their first day of school next week, and they did it for free. The back-to-school event was hosted by the Chicago Police Department's Austin District. That's the 15th. Pediatricians from Loyola University Medical Center also offered free checkups at a healthcare van outside the police station. It's a nice thing.
Yeah, so important.
Getting better to get the kids sent back to school. Is that enough, you think? That's the top six.
You got six of them.
That's it!
That's all today for the top six at six.
No more!
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
312-981-7200. That is the telephone number. That is also the number for texting the show. And you can get in any time about anything. And, you know, maybe we get your text on the air. Usually what happens each morning is we get six or seven really angry people who get up and they have breakfast and then they send us nasty things. But the vast majority of texts are lovely people.
Oh, yeah. Well, I feel like, you know, people that are disgruntled generally are the ones that make the effort to write in or call in or say something. It's like Yelp reviews. You don't really go and Yelp if something's fantastic. You go and, well, I don't Yelp at all, but you don't, I mean, you Yelp when you are dissatisfied and unhappy.
Yeah, and that's the response I've given to many in the past, is I'm not sure what's making you so unhappy, but I hope it ends soon.
Yeah. I mean, if you're happy, you're just out and about living your life and, you know, spreading positivity.
Well, I don't know if $100,000 will make you happier, but there is a company willing to pay you $100,000 if you'll quit your job and make a leap into the unknown. Sounds exciting.
What's the unknown?
I could want to start. What, you know, what would you do with $100,000? What would you do? If you had $100,000 extra dollars right now, what would you do?
What, one thing or like several things?
Well, it's up to you. It depends on how you invest it. Piranha, P-R-A-N-A, a California-based sustainable clothing company that sells apparel containing recycled content, hemp, organic fibers, wants to give someone $100,000 to quit their job and join them. The goal of the promotion is to spread our clothing for positive change philosophy. I know what you're saying. Bunch of them California hippies.
It sounds like hippies have gotten written all over this.
You know, the nice,
you hear the word hemp, and that's
hippies. Yeah.
The nice thing about clothing with hemp in it is you don't have to really iron it. There's no ironing involved.
Is that right?
Yeah.
You got to watch, it might catch on fire if you leave the iron on there too long.
Applicants should submit a video between 30 and 180 seconds long and describe their current gig and what their dream job would entail. And they're going to give you $100,000 to do your dream job.
You know what? This reminds me of the stories where you hear about those jobs where you can be a custodian of an island off of Australia and they'll pay you that amount of money. I think that always sounds pretty good.
Well, they're going to dole it out in four separate quarterly installments, so there's actually equity involved. You don't just take $100,000 and go blow it in Vegas.
Here's the thing, though. Are you driving around in a big van, like, all across the country?
Yeah, VW van.
Without, you know, making any stops, living
like
in the
Wienermobile?
Van. Yeah, and, like, passing out hemp shirts. Like,
it appears, and I'm just scanning this, but it appears that you get to do what you want. Mm. And they're supporting you. They're giving you $100,000 to chase your dream, whatever your dream is.
Oh, so you don't have to help with the clothing line.
Oh.
No, you don't have to smoke a shirt even.
Oh. Mm. I would think that would be a perk, being able to smoke as you...
Got to be at least 21. And you don't have to actually quit your job just because you entered. But I'm thinking if you're going to be gone for a year, they may notice.
Wait a minute. Are you trying to get rid of one of us?
No.
Wait a minute. What about you, Steve? What would you do?
Oh, we're out of time. It's 6:31. We got to get to the news. Now, how old are you?
I am 10 years old.
14.
8. 12.
I'm 18.
I'm 10 years old.
What grade are you in or about to go into?
I'm a senior.
8th grade.
Sophomore year.
Just finished junior year, so yes, I'm a senior.
I'm in 4th.
What do you do for fun?
I love art. Art is my favorite.
I do soccer, basketball, cheerleading, tennis, baseball.
I like to play on the trampoline, and I love to make slime.
I act in plays, and I sing all the time.
I also write stories because I love writing.
I play tennis. I also like to play soccer with my best buddy, but I'm not on a team.
Listen, you're a great kid. What do you want to be when you grow up?
I'm still figuring it out.
Pediatric oncologist.
I really want to be a marine biologist.
I'm not really sure yet, but I'm looking into biomechanical engineering.
I want to be an orthodontist because you can help kids feel better at their smile.
Will you run for president someday?
I want to.
Are you excited to be on the show?
Yeah.
You sound super excited. Have you ever been more excited than this?
Yeah.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
10 of the week every week at this time. And if you have a kid you think is worthy of the honor, could be a kid just getting it over. Getting better with something. Yeah, a D student turns into a B student. Or it could be somebody that's saving lives and literally doing big picture things. It could be anything in between.
Big dreams.
I just like stories about kids doing well. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Isabella Roscoe joins us. Good morning, Isabel.
Good morning.
How are you today?
Good. How are you?
It's Isabella, right?
Yeah.
And is it a Roscoe?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I get half credit then, I guess.
Yeah.
Right?
A plus.
Who is Ms. Schmidt? She's one of your teachers.
Yeah, she's my science and English teacher.
I'm going to brag about you for a second, make you uncomfortable, okay? Ms. Schmidt writes, I've been a teacher for a long time. Isabella is one of the hardest working students I've ever had the privilege of teaching. She's a gifted athlete. She's her accomplishments her eighth grade year include 4 quarters honor roll, top student award for religion, crusader, top athlete academic award, Christian service award, Marie Wilkinson scholarship, first place in state for the 800-mile run. And the amazing thing is none of this is easy. She worked very hard for every bit of it. All this while remaining one of the most humble and unassuming people I've ever met. How about a round of applause for Isabella?
Yay, Isabella!
Thank you.
That's pretty cool. That is pretty cool. What is the 800-mile run?
The 800, it's a, like, middle distance. It's like,
Do you add up a bunch of your other runs till you get to 800?
No, it's 2 laps and, like, a 400-meter track.
Oh, got it.
Mm. Yeah, and it's a very difficult run, I might add.
Isabella, what do you think of your teacher, Ms. Schmidt?
She's a very good teacher. Yeah, she's very good at explaining and very patient with students.
What's your favorite subject? What do you do well in school?
I like social studies.
And what do you know what you want to be when you grow up?
I'm not sure yet, but maybe something in politics.
Really? Well, that's interesting because we need new people. I will vote for you right now, and you're only 14. Are you 14? Is that right?
Yeah, I'm 15 now.
15, got it. How's your summer?
Yes, good. I just entered school last week.
Yeah, what'd you do on the summer? What'd you do on your summer vacation?
I practiced a lot.
Okay.
And I did some summer programs to go and help out.
So you get out there, yeah. Both my kids are in snowball. So when you get after stuff, you seem to get after it. This is a very busy schedule. Do you have time to add anything else?
Sometimes I do.
Yeah, I was going to ask, what do you do for fun?
All this stuff.
Run.
Run? Well, run. Yeah, you know, keep running because one day it won't be fun. But anyway, congratulations. You're the kid of the week. And what do we have for her, Super Joe? What should we give our friend Isabella Roscoe?
We have a couple gift cards. We have one to Lou Malnati's and another one to Apt.
How about that? That's for you, Isabella.
Thank you.
Have a great day at school. Thanks for calling. Or being on. I guess we called her.
Oh, she sounds adorable.
Nice young lady.
Yes.
This is just a misprint. It's the 800-meter run. I thought it was the 800-mile run.
Oh, it does say.
You did make it sound a little more dramatic, though.
It's 2 times around the track.
I just thought maybe that it was runs and you accumulated your distance over a period of time.
Oh, I see. I didn't even. Hey, that makes total logical sense, Steve Cochran.
I've probably run 800 miles in my life. Of course, I haven't run since about 1990.
We used to call it the 880. Do you remember?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's the 800 now. That's what they call it.
Okay. Shortchanging it. It's still 2 440s, isn't it?
It's they call it the 400 now. So
we can get you one of those.
Did they short it by 40 meters?
I don't know. I don't know what happened with the actual measuring of the track.
If you really want to know, we could get you one of those little step counters. We could count your steps throughout the day. Oh, how many steps have you been doing? What have you been
since
averaging?
I got up this morning.
Just in general per day,
I averaged 10,000.
Okay, that's good. And that sounds like a lot of steps.
It's what everybody should do, more or less. So far today, I'm just shy of that. 949 steps.
You're lying.
You're almost there. You know, my wife has an Apple Watch, and she knits. And when she knits, she's getting steps.
Because
I guess it's the motion of her
arms.
Oh, yeah.
Beating. If you sit down and you're just sitting here, if I go like this.
Really?
That's cheating. Stop, Steve.
No, he is I didn't know it worked that way.
But like I told you guys.
Nah, it didn't move.
If
I'm still
I wear this Fitbit when I ballroom dance, it does not work because you dance, you go backwards.
Well, you know where else it doesn't work? Doesn't work on a treadmill. Doesn't work on a bike.
What do you mean? Doesn't?
I'm telling you, no. Fitbit doesn't work on a treadmill or a bike.
The Apple Watch does.
Mine does.
Somebody just, okay.
You want to borrow it?
Trade, yeah. By the way, somebody just texted, 440 yards is 400 meters, genius.
It's nice he recognizes your academic achievement.
Exactly.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Little Billy Preston, out of space. Billy Preston is one of the great musicians. Is this Billy? Oh, this is this confunction? Doesn't take away from Billy, but
yeah.
halfway
I like how Super
halfway
Joe
into
just
my
isn't answering you.
He's doing it behind the scenes. Halfway into my sermon, I started to think, no, this isn't out of space. But Billy Preston, that Billy Preston, man, he was good.
Well, like, I know who it's by, but I don't know what the artists in that band.
No, Billy wasn't in the Commodores.
Yeah.
He was his own deal. Played with the Beatles for a while. In studio stuff. All right, listen, BuzzFeed is one of the great time-wasting websites of all time. And from BuzzFeed comes today's text question.
Okay.
You ever wondered how stuff got started? For instance, who was the first person to see an egg come out of a chicken's butt and say, that looks good, I'm going to eat that? Who was the first person to say, hang gliding, take something with a wing on it, jump off a cliff, that seems like a good idea? Who was the first person to see a sunset? Who was the first person to ever hear a bird speak, a parrot speak? And then what did they do? Walk around for days wondering if they should tell anybody because they thought they were crazy? Who was the first person to ever try ventriloquism? Dave, come over here, sit on my lap while I work your limbs. And
that should just not happen.
How about the first person to eat cottage cheese? Why didn't they throw it out immediately and say, no one should try this?
Or sour cream, especially.
Sour cream, yeah. The word sour. I love sour cream.
Right.
Blue cheese. Yeah. Blue cheese, fungus.
Right.
So, who was the first person to eat a potato? A potato looks like a dirty rock.
Mm-hmm.
Good Lord, look where they're grown.
Somebody pretty hungry, probably.
So that's the text question. Who was the first person to? Right?
It's very deep.
312, no, not really. 312-981-7200. You just think of stuff and you go, who would have tried that? How about the first person to climb on a 1,500-pound bull and then see how long you could stay on before it killed you? Or how about the first person to get into the rodeo clown getup and be the one that scared the bull away?
First person
ever to give birth to twins was like, wait a minute, didn't we just do this? These are all first-person questions from BuzzFeed. 312-981-7200 is the text line. 312-981-7200.
I've always wondered about ski jumping.
First person to jump off the end of the ski thing.
Right? Why would you do that?
What?
There's a perfectly good hill right there.
I always think about food items.
Like
the blowfish, you know, that's supposed to kill you, but unless you slice it a certain way.
Yeah, who's the first person to try that?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people must have died.
Well, that must have been the only way you could have determined that
it
would kill you.
Well, I'm sure the food stuff just happens, you know, because people are, like Steve said, hungry. Okay. And
can you imagine how terrible a restaurant would be if you only specialized in blowfish and it was very early in the blowfish days? I don't know what's going on, but all the customers keep dying.
Yeah. And along those lines, who's the first person that decided to fry something? Like, was just a hot vat of oil and a piece of chicken fell in it and somebody said, oh, look,
God,
it's fried
that
chicken.
Happened.
Yeah.
Praise.
I don't know who they are, but they should be given sainthood immediately.
Absolutely.
Nobel Prizes.
I think about haircuts. Like, who invented the mullet? You know, I mean, some of these haircuts.
Yeah, because somebody had to think that looked good.
Yeah. There's a lot of weird haircuts back in the day.
How about the first person to look at a beehive with bees crawling all over it and go, you know what's in there? Something really good I could spread on toast.
Maybe they watched a bear go in and, you know, get honey.
You think?
Yeah.
Boo boo.
Oh, that's pretty good.
312-981-7200. That is the line. And I wonder who the first person was to shave. Because I don't like shaving.
And what did they use?
I'm guessing that was
super
after the
sharp
Ice
rock.
Age.
Yeah.
Sometime after the Ice Age, somebody decided.
You think there's
it was
like a cave
hot.
Woman that said to the caveman, "Seriously, what are you, a bear?
Stop trying
shave
to kiss
that.
Me."
Yeah. How about maple syrup coming out of a tree? Who's the first person to say, "Ooh, boy, that'll be good on pancakes"? Well, it's coming out of a tree.
You're walking by with a pancake, and the pancake accidentally rubs up against the tree. There you go.
Oh, so it's like the Reese's peanut butter cup thing.
That's it.
Yeah, peanut butter runs into chocolate. Texas 312-981-7200. That is the text line to tell us what your quandary is. Who was the first person to ...
I like that word, quandary.
Yeah, it's a I was in a band called Quandary.
Really?
Yeah, we were very confused. Yeah. Most of the time, we didn't last. It's 6:55, and what are we doing now, Joe? I've completely lost place in the show. I focused for almost a complete hour.
You've got to be exhausted.
Ugh.
We got news coming up at the top of the hour. We have one commercial break before that.
Okay, so we should probably take that right now?
Sure.
All right, did I ask Steve what was coming up?
Yes, we did.
I did it right on time, too, didn't I?
You did even early, actually.
You actually did a little early.
That's why we're confused. Listen, coming up in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom, that guy, Steve Grzanich, and he'll be on here shortly. Thanks. Now this.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
Listeners chiming in already on the pressing question of the day. Dave, who was the first person to ... 708, who was the first person that thought piercing their private parts was a good idea?
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to take this stapler.
It's early to be thinking about that.
That's been going on a long time, though.
It has?
Well,
probably.
As long as I can remember.
Wow. Whoa.
Really?
No, I mean,
Wild Dave.
No, I'm
so
not
you were a
personally.
Boy,
no,
you were a boy in the roaring 20s. They were doing this.
No, rumor has it. Naughty.
815. I always wondered who was the first person to dig a clam out of the mud and say, "I want to eat that."
Yeah, that looks good.
Yeah. Clams, oysters.
But that, I mean, there's
mussels.
So many foods you can say that.
Yes.
With, though, like who thought of eating this?
I mean,
cotton candy.
Well,
815. Who was the first person to eat cotton candy?
Delicious. Oh, it's the worst.
I don't like cotton candy.
Yeah, you don't?
I don't either.
No. I like
either.
It. It's like eating
well,
air.
Well, you're clearly
it is
wrong.
Like eating air.
847, who was the first person to try psychedelic mushrooms? I think it was the first person that just, probably not the first person, I should say, to eat mushrooms. And they got the psychedelic mushrooms, mm-hmm. and they thought, ooh, I got something here.
Hmm. Yeah, I bet it's the same guy that tried the clams.
224, who was the first person to inhale helium and talk funny?
That's a good one.
That is good.
That
yeah.
is.
Yeah. Who was the first person that thought it'd be a good idea to eat fish eggs?
Oh, well, the caviar.
Yeah.
And now.
But that's what they are. Have you had caviar?
Of course. And then sushi. It's
well,
delicious.
I've had sushi.
Yeah,
but caviar is caviar.
But
good?
Like a Bellini, yeah, you can have a little pancake with a little sour cream on it with a little caviar and wash it down with some vodka.
But that guy, Beluga, right? He's the one that came up with the best caviar.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Let's see. First person to use toilet paper. I don't think I thought of that. Who was the first person to eat an artichoke? Who was the first person to invent a shovel?
I'm just glad that we live in this time period and that I wasn't in this experimental phase where they're trying to figure out what was actually edible.
Well, there's still stuff going on now, you know, mm-hmm. where new things are being discovered every day, but you still have to have somebody who will actually try those new things.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to bet that the shovel inventor was probably somebody dissatisfied with an in-law.
I bet that's true, too. Well
wow,
said by you.
Wow, Grzanich went dark.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Like, first person to jump out of an airplane, I get, because the airplane was clearly broken. So they jumped out and they said, hey, whoever's next, you're going to need something called a parachute.
Well, I still don't understand how a plane works. I don't know how I'm getting into one. Every time I'm like, how does this thing work?
Who was the first person hungry enough to look at a lobster or crab and think, yum. Because they are not pretty. Lobsters,
yeah, they were
crab,
like, the, like the poor people food back in the day, apparently.
Is that right?
The fishermen, yeah. It was like the thing that everybody just had plenty of, and the working class would eat lobster and get so sick of eating lobster, and now it's this delicacy.
Lobster has no taste without the stuff you put on lobster.
It depends where you get the lobster from.
This conversation reminds me of the other night I was turning around on the TV and came across something called Drunk History. Have you guys ever watched
it? Oh, yes. Sure. Yeah. Uh-huh.
So that's that would make this conversation a little bit better. We just start drinking and keep going on the history.
Who was the first person to get drunk, wake up with a vicious hangover, and say, I can't wait to do this again?
Hair of the dog.
Right.
Always a cure. Just to get right back into it again.
The first person to take two raw eggs and put in a glass of vinegar and drink it. Is that what it is? That the cure?
Well, I didn't know that. I just knew that you just start drinking again to help. Well, Bloody Mary helps. Greasy food.
And finally, 847, at least finally for now, who was the first person to try milk out of a cow? Because you'd have to realize what's going on. I would think that's one of those things that sort of comes naturally. You know, because you figure the mother feeds the baby, the cow would. But then again, you got to drink it. We're talking pre-pasteurization here, people.
Have you ever milked a cow?
I have, actually, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, I grew up in dairy farm country.
Oh, really? How did that go for you?
It was weird.
Mm-hmm.
It was a school trip. And
it is a weird. It's not easy to do.
Yeah, you've done it. You were in rural North Carolina.
Well, I mean, I didn't have a cow. I only had a goat. But I mean, and I didn't milk the goat.
Well, the cow has to be in the right mood. I took the cow out for dinner first, played a little Luther Vandross. 7:02, news time right now. Let's go there right now then, because Steve is standing by and he's had just about enough of this. This news on the Steve Cochran Show. Where you can check out the latest edition of the podcast at WGNRadio.com/Cochran or go to the WGN Radio app anytime.
The Steve Cochran Show.
Candidate for president and unemployed radio guy, Joe Walsh. Well, John is before 8. I guess he still has his show here, but he's been kicked off their network. Anyway, we'll talk to Joe about that coming up. And also, I think he'll be announcing his running mate today.
You?
No, I am not under consideration. I would never consider not being here in the morning.
You're so gracious.
I do it for the kids. The text question of the day, who was the first person to ever do what? 214. You know, a lot of what you're talking about, Steve, happened after we watched an animal do or something and or eat something and not die, and then we did it.
I think so too. Yeah, a lot of imitation and observation.
847. Who is the first person to determine which words were the swear words? Like, why is something that rhymes with duck a swear word? Why?
I don't know, but it is. Yeah.
312, who was the first person to have a colonoscopy and who was the first guy to perform it?
Oh, no, not that again.
810, who was the first person to look at a pig and say, ooh, I'd like to cook that up.
I know. And then think all the things you have to do to make bacon. It's not easy.
Yes, but it's all worth it.
You've never had to butcher a pig.
Who was the first person to... Who was the first person to say, hold my beer? Okay, that's someone that's spending too much time in bars. 847, who was the first person to wear their pants down past their knees? Well, one me.
That was a fashion statement.
But what came first, long pants or short pants? Probably long pants.
Ooh.
Who was the first person to cut off the long pants?
What about, like...
I guess cavemen, if you believe the Flintstone look.
Right.
I believe if you're wearing, what is that called, a tunic?
Or animal skins.
I believe if you're wearing that, you were showing off your gams. So maybe shorts were first.
Well, that was also how you drove, because you needed to keep your feet moving.
That's a good point. I need to talk to my designer. You know, I'm a Bob Dockers. You know Bob Dockers? Who was the first person to do a chicken dance at a wedding, and why did they do it?
Drunk.
Na 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 na. Who was the first person to even think about putting a Tide Pod in their mouth?
Oh. Drunk. A lot of that.
Who was the first person to turn 66? Reason I ask, I turned 66 tomorrow. I'm just wondering. Who was the first person to kiss Donald Trump and then recommend others try it?
Oh.
Who was the first person to swallow a sword? That's a good one.
Who
thought that was a good idea?
It's probably comes from some sort of
bet
or like ritual or something, dance or.
If you had some sort of allergy though, and you sneezed right in the middle of it, that'd be trouble.
Oh, Even that neti pot thing is weird, that people do the neti pot. Who thought of that? And people are always recommending it, too.
The neti pot?
Yeah.
I've tried it.
But, I mean, it's a weird
thing. You
have to
be really miserable to do it.
People always recommend it.
224, who was the first person to vote for Trump? That'd be interesting to know. Like, in 2016, who was the first person to vote for Trump? It was probably Trump.
Who thought it was a good idea to invent the waterbed? Remember the waterbed?
I do remember the waterbed.
Did you have one?
No.
Oh, I did.
No, Maureen's parents had one. You had one in your house, Mayor?
Oh, yeah. I told you guys this story of how my son's water broke in the waterbed.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, wow.
That was
interesting. Seems redundant. 6th row, who's the first one to separate egg yolks and egg whites, beat the whites in order to make waffles? Without an electric beater the first time, they would have taken like an hour by hand.
Oh, yeah. That's not easy to do. Mm. Like if you're making angel food cake, you just
I have a feeling
that
somebody
whites.
Making eggs this morning that just thought of that while they were listening. 630, Steve, who thought it would be a good idea to eat or sniff glue?
I think that just happened.
Yeah, the first person to be making a model airplane probably came up with that.
Like sniffing Sharpie markers.
224, after Dave, who was the first person to try kale?
Okay.
Is it harder for you to work on the 18th floor? Because when we worked at the Tribune Tower, if you got hungry, you could just go out and just start nibbling on the median where the grass was.
That was kale, wasn't it?
It was. All the fresh
they have
kale.
Nice planters in the lobby here at 303.
There you go. 406, who was the first person to... let me try that one again. 406, who was the first person to bungee jump? That's a fair question. Because
that's also fairly recent.
Yeah, like in the last 30 years,
yeah,
25 years. Who was the first person that said, okay, I got a long strap, and we're pretty sure we measured it right.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's going to stretch out and get to the bottom, and you're still going to be above ground, and then you're going to snap back up, and it's going to be hilarious. You had to run through a few friends, I would think, before you got that measurement right. First person to ever see their own reflection. Well, I don't know if that would scare you. All right, so there you go. 312-981-7200 is the number. 810 wants to know who the first person to French kiss was.
Oh.
Maybe somebody French.
I don't know where that term came from, but the idea of jamming your tongue down someone's mouth.
Gross.
Right?
Well, I mean, just the way you described it. Gross.
Right.
I'm sure it's nice. When it's
between two consensual
adults.
And the tongue technically doesn't go all the way down the throat.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it depends on your
not in my experience.
I mean, that's a bad date if that happens. That's just disgusting.
Yeah.
Who's the first person to honestly believe the delicate little flower is a stable genius? Oh, that was Sean Hannity. I like you guys. You're funny. 312-981-7200.
They know how to get to your heart, Steve.
Yeah. Warms my cockles.
What?
My cockles.
Those are shellfish.
Yes.
Yes.
Who's the first person to ever walk a tightrope? You see, that's the thing, too. Who saw a rope and just said, hey, you guys, you know what would be funny? Let's see if I can stay on it. I'm going to walk from here to there.
I'm sure circus performers and artists.
Who was the first person to run the tilt-a-whirl at the carnival?
Oh, the carnival is frightening.
Mm-hmm. Who was the first person to use hot wax to remove hair?
Now, that's
an
a
old
good
thing,
one.
Isn't it?
Yeah, but it's an old thing, but that's a good one.
I bet it was somebody who spilled a candle on their leg.
Yeah, I bet you you're right.
Yeah, and then they realized,
and
hey.
Then they pulled off the wax and the hair came up.
Ding.
And like, wow.
Just hope they didn't do it in their armpit.
Million-dollar
idea. Well, it's got to be special wax, though. It can't just be, you know, candle wax isn't going to work. It's got to be pliable. It's got to be the right consistency.
What kind of wax is it?
It's like a kind of malleable. It's like hardens, and it hardens around the hair, but then it's you can pull it, and it still stays together. It's a special formula.
It's hard being a girl.
In more ways than one, trust us.
307, who's the first person to eat the cream in an Oreo cookie first? These things just never end.
Well, or dunk it in milk.
I've never dunked an Oreo in milk. How dare you?
That's the best part. Are you kidding me?
Absolutely not.
You... you
how dare you?
You eat
dare
the cream
you blasphemize
first.
The Oreo.
You eat the cream first, and then that way you dunk it in the milk, so that way it's not so dry. Because the cookie part is so crumbly and dry.
Yeah, it's kind of boring.
Do you think was there anything on the box of Oreos or the package of Oreos that said dunk this in milk? Is there anything that says that's part of it? In the instructions, does it say dunk these in milk?
It does now. I mean, they run commercials where it's
original
all about that.
Oreo commercial was the dunking in milk.
Got to be the right amount of time. It can't be too much because then it's too soggy and it'll crumble into your
milk. You guys are all commies.
That is American, sir.
But there's a lot of like food combos that, you know, you wonder who thought of putting this with this together.
Like kale with anything?
Okay. You're just...
Poor Dave.
722.
This
what's coming
is my
up, Steve?
Life, geez.
Steve, one
I'm
of the stories...
So sorry.
We're...
The Steve Cochran Show presents the most valuable person on the planet.
It is 7:26, the most valuable person on the planet. How would you describe it, G? What is this thing we do?
It is the person that's doing the most wonderful, important thing on planet Earth.
That should be recognized?
Absolutely. They should get a trophy.
So you think we should give them a ribbon or something?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, we'll give them something. Melissa Graham's on the phone. Let's go to Melissa now. Good morning, Melissa.
Hi, how are you? Good morning to you.
I don't like asparagus, Melissa.
You haven't been through our program then.
It's called Purple Asparagus. What is it?
So we are a nutrition education provider that teaches young kids about loving fruits and vegetables.
Well, I think this would have been good for me when I was a little kid.
Apparently.
1966, 7, 8, and 9.
It's not too late for him to enroll, is it, Melissa?
Well, you know what? It's for first through second graders, so I think he's probably a little bit past the time frame.
That would have been 1967, 68, somewhere in there. Well, listen, what got you starting on this?
So I was inspired by my mom. My mom was an elementary school teacher, and so many of my favorite family memories involve food and eating food and making food.
Dave, before you developed your love for kale, when were you? When were you? Were you always a good eater?
I was okay, but my mom, you know, she kept trying and she kept introducing new things and new fruits and vegetables, and finally I became a great eater.
Well, Dave Ennett here, our sports guy, the legendary Dave Ennett, you know Dave Ennett.
Yes.
Dave Ennett he just eats everything. Well, I mean, he eats everything healthy.
No, yeah, well, I try.
So
I
when
try.
Did you start, Mr. Healthy?
Oh, I don't know that I ate really healthy until I was probably in my 20s, maybe my 30s.
What changed it?
I just think a greater awareness of the need to eat healthier and just kind of, I mean, I don't think I ate terribly.
Did you go cold turkey right away? Not that you eat cold turkey.
Well, I never ate like a lot of fried food and stuff.
Oh, okay.
But I always liked asparagus.
Well, you're wrong.
Okay.
There are many vegetables I like. Hold on a second. I'm waiting for my mother to stop laughing. There are many vegetables I like, but just asparagus isn't one of them. That's all, Melissa.
Well, you know what? Then that's exactly the kind of things that we teach in our classroom, that you have to decide what you like and what you don't like, but the most important thing is that you try.
So you're going to make me sit here at the table until I try.
You're not leaving.
Tell me where Purple Asparagus is located.
So our offices are in Logan Square, but our programs are delivered all over Chicago. So we are teaching our program in this upcoming school year in 16 schools all throughout Chicago, mostly in underserved communities.
I think it's really important.
This is super important, especially with the obesity epidemic that children are facing and all the amounts of overly processed foods that they have available as snacks, right?
That is precisely correct. We feel we take a very simple approach to healthy eating, and that is if you get lots of fruits and vegetables into your diet and you get the processed food out, you're going to be well on your way to a healthy lifestyle.
I have an apple for dinner almost every night.
Well, you know, your mom probably taught you that one too.
And
maybe I did it myself.
Now, Melissa, do you notice that once the kids go through the program, do you notice that most of them, what's the percentage of kids that leave feeling like, wow, there are some vegetables that I enjoy?
Yeah, so the parents have reported last year that 76% of the parents reported that their kids were eating more fruits, and 67% reported that they were eating more vegetables.
Well, that should make you very happy.
It was very good news at the end of the year.
Well, thanks to your mom for inspiring you to be not a pioneer. What would you be? A missionary in the idea of better nutrition for kids.
I always kind of consider myself the tour guide to the vegetable world.
That's not going to make a lot of friends for you, but I understand it's an important gig. Thank you for coming on. I appreciate it. Thanks for the work you do.
Of course. Thank you.
There you go.
You know what? We're going to talk to Melissa about maybe doing just a special tour for one big kid. You, Steve Cochran.
If you want to make asparagus some morning, and I'll try it on the air.
Oh, okay. Well, you don't like asparagus with hollandaise sauce?
Oh,
with
when you
butter?
Grill it?
Oh, my goodness.
Oh,
the
so
thing
good.
Is, I think you're eating asparagus overcooked, and that's a big problem a lot of people are doing, is they're overcooking their vegetables.
So like you're the resident food expert on the show, so it'd have to be, you got to bring me some asparagus that you think I'll eat.
What about, you know, you could have an asparagus salad where they shave the asparagus so it's a lot thinner and it's crispy. It's just slightly blanched. You'll enjoy it mixed with other vegetables in a salad.
Just the word blanch. If you have to blanch something.
I'm not talking about the Golden Girl. I'm talking about a cooking technique.
If food has to be blanched, it can't be good.
And the thing is, you don't want to overcook your vegetables because then you cook all the nutrition out of it.
That's
you
right.
want it, you know, lightly cooked.
Well, that's what I do with the mee rice sweet corn. Did you try it, by the way?
It was delicious.
Isn't it great?
Yes, and I did not need butter, honey.
Right?
Mm-mm.
That's great.
I had it last night on the grill.
That's
didn't need to grill it, but I did.
I saw Super Joe grilled it, too, but I was a little concerned because his corn looked a little like charred. I was
that's
worried.
Okay if you char
okay.
That's but it looked really charred in the photo he sent.
Did you did you burn your corn?
No. You soak it in water and then you put it on the grill.
Okay.
And that part chars off and it's deliciously good.
Oh, right. Fabulous.
Did you wrap it in tinfoil?
I did not, no.
Well, okay.
You know, I do have a chef friend who makes his kids eat their vegetables, and the kids will go like, yuck, I don't like it. He doesn't stand for that. He makes the kids articulate what specifically about the texture or the taste they don't like. So
well, see,
I
that's
recommend,
the kind of thing that's just going to turn them into healthy people.
But I recommend that if there's a parent listening that you should do that because it encourages dialogue and using more vocabulary words and articulating
right.
yourself. So it's not just, yuck, I hate it.
Right.
Gross.
Right. No, you're right. Of course you're right.
So I'm going to make you articulate why you don't like asparagus.
It tastes like crap. It's 7:33. We'll come back to the headlines in just a second.
Today I'm declaring my candidacy for President of the United States because it's time to be brave. We have someone in the White House who we all know is unfit. Someone who lies virtually every time he opens his mouth. And someone who places his own interests above the nation's interest at every single turn. We cannot afford four more years of Donald Trump. My name is Joe Walsh. I'm a former Republican congressman. I'm a conservative. I'm running because Donald Trump is not who we are. In fact, he's the worst of who we are.
You could disagree with Joe Walsh's politics or things he said in the past or who he says he is now. But I tell you what, he's stepping up and he joins me now on the phone. My old pal Joe Walsh, also known as a soon-to-be unemployed radio guy.
How are you, Steve Cochran? Yeah.
All the media you did in the last couple of days, were you surprised at all about the Democrats lining up to take shots at you?
I feel like Ali Frazier round one, Steve. It's look, I knew this would be really, really difficult. I'm taking on a president, and so here I am 30-some hours into it, and I'm getting a lot of people on my side, conservatives and Republicans, Trump supporters, who are pounding me. And yeah, you're right, a lot on the left as well.
I don't quite understand that part of the equation. You think it's just because you are on the other side, or is it the past statements that you've apologized for? Where's it coming from?
You know, it's interesting, Steve. Look, I believe Trump's unfit. I've made that the focus of my campaign. I know the left and Democrats believe that. I've tried to be, and I'm going to continue to be as honest as I can, that I actually came from the Trump world, and I get it. I understand why he got elected, and I've said things and stepped in it as well. But there have been a lot of Democrats who understand that and forgive. I mean, rarely do we have any public figure apologize for anything.
The thing that seems to be missed by an awful lot of people, in my opinion, is simply that the priority here is not what 2020 candidates say they're going to do in 2020. What candidates say on the trail, there's a small fraction of that you can ever get done in 4 years as president or eight.
Yeah.
But what matters is who's in the White House, who's in the White House, and who's able to do the job. I, of course, am 100% on board with the Trump ain't the guy bandwagon. I've been screaming about it as long as you have.
Yeah.
So for all the folks who say, no, we want to talk about issues, America wants to talk about issues, I'm telling you right now, America gets up every day. Their number one concern is, what did this dope say this time?
Their number one concern, Steve, when they wake up is, did Donald Trump send out a tweet this morning attacking me? I mean, you're right. This is an absolutely weird situation. It's weird challenging him in a Republican primary and saying, I'm not going to talk about the issues right now. I will, but the issue is him. I don't remember a president who was so completely unfit, who lied almost every time he opened his mouth. The issue is him. We can't have him in the White House, period.
The lies are dumb. You know, the lies this week, the lie, Melania is close with Kim Jong-un. She's never met him. I couldn't make the climate change meeting because I was meeting with the German and the Indian leaders. They're in the picture with an empty chair between the two of you at the meeting. I mean, just the automatic instinct is to lie, and that should be very concerning. I don't know how people haven't gotten that by now.
He lied about high level phone conversations with China that never ever happened. And then in the midst of all these lies, Steve, he's pushing business for one of his resorts down in Florida. I mean, look, most Americans are disgusted with and tired of who he is.
Right.
I get that. I'm in a Republican primary, and my battle is, most Republicans privately believe that, I believe. They're just afraid to come out and say it publicly.
Where's the money going to come from? It's expensive to do what you're doing.
It's expensive, and I won't have Trump's money. But you know what? We've been at this now. We're just in really day two. We've raised some decent money. We've gotten money from people in. I think it's going to have to be grassroots from, like, people all over the country, Steve, who are... Our campaign slogan, tell me if you like this, Mr. Cochran, be brave. Be brave, period.
No, I love it.
It's time to be brave.
Yeah,
I'm sticking my neck out, and I'm getting pounded. And I believe that most of us believe he's unfit. They're afraid to say it publicly. So come on out, get in the water with me, and call him out. I think that's where the money eventually is going to come from, too.
Yeah, look, again, politically you can disagree all day long, but if we're not all Americans, that's where the problems start, and this G7 conference was a problem on a million levels, including the fact that Donald Trump and the United States of America were marginalized. We were like the kids that didn't get to sit with the other kids at lunch.
It's interesting you use that analogy, Steve, because, and this hurts me to say it, but he's a child. I mean, we have a child in the White House. He's an ill-behaved, impulsive child, and you see it when he's around other world leaders. But again, my battle is to, I really do believe, Steve, that most everybody, even most Republicans, believe this. I think it's going to get worse with this president. I still think this issue of impeachment isn't going away. And I know I'm a Republican. This president, if you read the Mueller report, it's clear what he did. The grounds for impeachment are there. I think this thing's going to get worse for Trump this fall.
So, Joe, how are you going to reach out? What's your strategy going to be to reach out and get through to those conservatives that are still staunchly behind the president?
It's a great question, and it's not going to be easy. And look, I'm going to try to make sure you see my lovely mug everywhere. I'm going to try to get on TV and put out videos everywhere to make the case that morally he's unfit, that I don't care what your politics are, We cannot support any president who lies like this one does. What it's going to take, I think, is just a few more people, you know, continuing to be brave, Republicans and conservatives sticking their neck out. I can tell you, I've been in conservative talk radio for a long time. Privately, my listeners, a lot of my listeners agree with me. It's just the hesitation to say it publicly. That's our objective. We got to figure out how to do that.
And I don't know how many people you'll bring over from the 25 to 30% who will always be behind him, but I do believe there's a large block of conservatives out there who are looking for someone who's actually conservative in their beliefs.
They need an alternative.
He's not.
You're right. Steve, you're right. He's not anything. He's Trump. All he cares about is Trump. He doesn't care about the wall. He cares about Trump. He didn't give a damn about the debt. He cares about Trump. I would say, based on the way he handled Russia attacking us in this last election, he didn't give a damn about America. He cares about Trump. So you're right. He's not anything. And it's my hope and my plan that more and more conservatives and Republicans will understand that.
You going to buy Greenland if you win?
I may lease it. I don't think I'm going to buy it. No, but see, you know what kills me, Steve, is like that's funny, and you're right, because you're a very funny guy.
It's ridiculous. Like, it's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. And people around him, Steve, I may not buy Greenland, but I'm sure the hell going to nuke hurricanes. I'm going to make sure that I do that.
And that's in 1 week.
But it's look, I voted for him in 2016. Here's the weird thing. I voted for him in 2016. I've said some things that people could say, oh, Joe, you've said some things like Trump. Maybe me on my knees, as genuinely as I can, apologizing for the fact that I voted for him, that I have said some things. Maybe I'm in a unique position to be able to hit him. I don't know.
Well, the fact that you do apologize for things you've said in the past is a characteristic that he doesn't have within him. He doesn't have an apology anywhere within him and doesn't believe he should. So I think that goes a long way towards showing your humanity versus his. And, you know, I wish you luck, man. It's not an easy road, but you're always going to be welcome here.
Anytime you call Steve Cochran, I'm yours. I love you. Thanks, right, brother.
Thanks, man. See you later.
I mean,
we disagree. Walsh and I have disagreed politically, you know, a little bit or a lot, mm-hmm. for years. But he's a really smart guy. And when I see him over the past few years taking shots at people, I go, come on, man. That's the stuff he's out there apologizing for now.
Right.
I don't know if he can get beyond that. He's a Republican who's actually standing up and saying, the country's more important. I'm going to go out and I'm going to try to do this because I think it's important for the country. Mitch McConnell's not standing up. Nobody in the Congress on the Republican side is standing up and doing this, including the Illinois delegation. Somebody's got to do it.
Well, it's only been a couple of days. Everyone's saying, you know, obviously it's a very much of a long shot, and he's a big, big underdog, but maybe he can at least influence some of the conservative voters out there, make a difference, and definitely pester the president for sure.
We just need so many people to be replaced. There's such cowardice in D.C. It's unbelievable.
Well, definitely there's a lot of people hurting right now economically and with the issues of gun control and safety and just trying to make it every day.
If you truly stop down and say what good has come of the last 2.5 years,
right.
It's a short list.
But it's all of our politicians, a lot of them.
Absolutely.
On both sides of the aisle. Yeah.
No question, it's both sides.
The Steve Cochran Show.
On 720 WGN.
Text on Walsh and Joe Walsh's appearance. Joe Walsh is an opportunist. This is 630. Joe Walsh is an opportunist. Voting for Walsh is a vote for Trump again. Joe Walsh's radio show has been failing in ratings. He's looking to reposition himself. Met him many times. Still not a fan. This is why America's great. You're entitled to your opinion.
You're not endorsing him.
Bill Weld, 815. Bill Weld is the former governor of Massachusetts who's running. And Bill Weld's been a previous guest on the show and multiple times. He's a very impressive guy. I don't believe he is. He doesn't pop on TV. This is a video era.
Mm. And I'm sure, you know, there's so many people that were involved in politics that are now talking heads in media. And I'm sure part of that is true. I'm sure he's positioning himself to think about the future too.
It could well be, but I take him at his word now that he's coming out now because he truly believes Trump is a problem, because I've followed his Twitter feed for a couple of years and he's been consistent in saying that.
Oh, and I'm sure he's getting a lot of
he's getting fired.
And negative comments too.
Yeah, like he's losing a job that he's well paid for.
His former base.
Yeah. So, 224, who was the first person who said, I'm going to pick these beans, roast them, grind them up, and put hot water through them. We'll drink it. We'll call it coffee.
Mr. Coffee. That's who that was.
Oh, it was?
Mr. Coffee. Wow. I always think about that with food in general, like we were talking about, like wheat and flour. Like, who thought to grind it up and bake it? And
Who thought how to make bread?
Yeah.
847, who was the first person to make head cheese and then eat it?
Well, you want to use the whole animal, because it's more respectful to use the whole animal if you're going to butcher an animal. That's what a lot of
A10, who the hell invented golf?
Exactly.
Hit, curse, hit,
like
curse, hit, throw club.
I want to know who invented the high heel and the bra to torture women forever.
Well, the bra is necessary, isn't it?
Depending.
Well, there's a sense of physics that goes on there. The high heel, for some women, yes. Jam your toes. Into the ground. I don't understand that either.
Or to kick someone really hard that deserves it.
Ouch. 219, he was the first person to do extreme skateboard jumps. Hey, Bobby, you try it first. 630, who was the first person who decided to run even though nobody was chasing him? Well, probably somebody was chasing him. It was probably a wild animal. And 920, who decided posting all your private info and photos on Facebook was a good idea?
Yeah, let's find that guy.
Back with Steve next in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, honey. You know I love you.
It's Moron Entertainment, an exclusive presentation of a couple of morons known as you and me, Dean, Steve,
us, we
the morons. So I heard earlier that a friend of TV and radio, Sebastian Maniscalco, ate it at the top of the MTV Awards last
night. Stunk the joint up last night.
Was it bad?
You thought Newark, New Jersey smelled already?
Well, I did not see it, but I'm told that he was doing material about safe spaces and triggering to that room. I'm not surprised he ate it.
You know, look, it's a room of mostly millennials.
Yeah.
You know, people who live on their phones, influencers.
Yeah.
The cream of the music world, predominantly hip hop. You know, and he's coming out there going, hey, my mother's in the back. She's grilling zucchini for everybody. You know, and he's doing this very blue-collar, bada-bing-style humor that he does, which in the, you know, in the right venue, right audience, you know, can be funny. But, man, it felt like a lead balloon. It would just pick your host or pick your audience.
Yeah, I don't get how that seemed to be a match.
Yeah, it's like if you know, you and I went to do a stage show for a group of 17-year-olds.
Yeah,
you know, it doesn't matter if you know people our age think it's funny. It's like in front of that particular audience, it's not going
to
work.
Yeah, or going to a senior citizen home and talking about your crack habit. You know, it's not. Yeah. It's not a good idea.
Yeah,
so
it's part of the deal. So it's you know, unfortunately, he's always been very, very pleasant. I didn't like one thing. He did say in his opening monologue that he's from Los Angeles. He's not from Los Angeles.
Where'd that come from?
He's born and raised in Arlington Heights. He may live in Los Angeles now, but
well, that's bizarre.
That's not where he is from.
Boo.
But he would certainly not be the first Chicagoan to, you know, leave Chicago, turn their back on him, and forget that they ever lived here.
Here's the thing. If he ate it, it's good that he said he was from L.A.
True.
So you got that going for
you. Yeah, very true. I guess it's not glamorous enough to say you're from the Chicago area or even, you know, to say I'm from Arlington Heights.
Yeah, that's weird.
Arlington Heights, Illinois.
Because
this
whole
deal?
I mean, a lot of that was based on where he grew up. Anyway, so yeah, the MTV Awards. We've got other stuff to talk about here in a little bit. I'm finding out the most interesting things about Ji Suk Yee, Dean, including the fact that She has three nearly empty tubes of toothpaste, but she wasn't gone to buy new toothpaste yet, so she keeps squeezing the three nearly empty ones.
Wow. Why is that, G?
I'm just a loser. That's what's happening right now.
Well, if toothpaste is still coming out.
I know. It's just at the last leg, and I felt like I was failing at adulting yesterday.
So you have like a hammer, and you're pounding on it?
Well,
to make
you
sure
know,
you
I almost grabbed the scissors and cut one open, you know, that wow. trick. Because, no, I'm just a failure as an adult. I'm out of supplies.
Let me think. How possibly, Dean, could we solve this problem? I mean, if there were only a solution to your toothpaste dilemma.
Oh, thanks for bringing this up, Steve.
Like, you know, maybe going to a store and getting more toothpaste.
I'm trying to impress Dean, and now I'm never going
to
do it.
Steve, that sounds like a good idea, but you try to find a tube of toothpaste in any store right
Fair
now.
Point.
It
Fair
is
point.
Very, very difficult to find right now.
Almost impossible.
Right. Any kind of store. You go to a 7-Eleven, you're not going to find toothpaste there. A gas station, you're not going to find
it there. No. You know, you could actually go to a hotel near you and say you're a guest and they'd give you samples.
They'll give you a tube for free, a small tube for free. Yeah.
So what would your mother say if she was listening?
Oh, right she'd now? Be horrified. I mean, the general point of it was that my entire home is in disarray, my apartment. I mean, I have dirty piles of clothing, clean piles of clothing. I'm out of conditioner. I'm out of hand soap. So I'm using dish soap as hand soap at the sink. I mean, this is pathetic. And I don't even have a family to take care
of. Was there some sort of nuclear explosion I missed that you didn't have a chance to get out and shop?
I quit at life this week, Steve. Wow. That's all that happened.
You
just
know why?
Quit.
You know why? I'll tell you why. Dean can back me up on this. You're tired. You're tired. This show will make you tired.
Yeah, sometimes you just don't feel like... Sometimes you spend 4 hours with Steve and you just lose,
man,
you
thanks,
lose
Dean.
The will to live.
Thank you, Dean. Naps. You must be taking naps.
Are well, you taking naps? I mean, I've just had other things to do after the show, and then it's nighttime, and then I like go to brush my teeth, and then darn the three empty tubes of toothpaste.
I'll bet your mom, though, would be proud that you are milking every single ounce of toothpaste out of those tubes. You are not wasting one bit.
Very frugal. Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
Toothpaste is expensive now. You know, it's over $1,000 a tube. I don't know if you know that.
If you can find it.
The price has gone up in the last few days.
On the black market. On the black
market. With your baking soda.
You know, I got to thank Mary for this. Mary Boyle, who came in and outed me during the commercial break to you.
Dean, the other thing is a text question today. Who is the first person that thought of ... We got some great ones that have come in. Who was the first person, Dean, that decided we needed deodorant? Mm. Hey, Bob, you smell. Here, take this thing, rub it under your armpits. Who was the first person that thought high heels were a good idea? Mm. High heels, we talked about this yesterday, I think, originally for men.
I could see that. Fancy guys. Yeah.
Torture device.
Maybe like a prince, like, you know how Prince wore high heels, but they were just kind of high shoes.
Yeah, Prince is short. He was tiny.
Didn't our founding fathers sort of wear, not like stilettos,
they wore
but
platforms, like.
John Adams wore a tasteful pump.
This was a question on Fact or Fiction last week.
Yeah, that's right.
They were short.
Who was the first person that thought of adding pumpkin to coffee?
Me.
These are all legitimate questions.
I had some this morning.
312-981-7200. That's the number. Text in yours. What's coming up with the show business news you're going to impart upon us? Do you have the new SNL host you're going to tell us about?
Well, we have some of the hosts who will be featured in the new season, including one who has not hosted SNL in 36 years, I think.
Wow.
Something like that. We've got Dave Chappelle talking about Michael Jackson. He's got a very interesting opinion about the Michael Jackson accusers that he includes in his new Netflix special. Yeah, and Steve, I know you're dying to hear more about the MTV Video Music Awards.
Sure.
And some of the big winners last night.
Okay. Who was the first person to try gum? It comes from the 847.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Put that in your mouth and just keep chewing it.
Just chew on it.
Yeah, just keep chewing on it.
Who was
Mr.
the first,
Wrigley.
Who was the first person to heat up corn, and why did they stop there? It had to be weird the first time you pop corn. That had to be kind of an accident, and then corn started popping. And they went, wow, I'm going to put this in a shaker with, like, tinfoil over it, and I'll make it, oh, in what?
A jiffy.
A jiffy. A jiffy. I'll make it a jiffy.
Yeah. But what shall we call it?
Jiffy.
Corn.
Jiffy corn. Jiffy pop.
Was that your popcorn sound? Oh, that's better.
Yeah. We discovered recently my son, who's 28, had never had Jiffy Pop.
What?
Because, I mean, think about it. These kids grew up with
microwave. I always thought you were a good father.
Microwave.
Microwave.
I don't think I've ever had Jiffy Pop. Is that the aluminum? That's the aluminum thing that you put over the
it's got a little
stove?
Tin foil. Yeah, it's got a little tin foil.
With the handle.
You put the whole thing right in the microwave.
But it looks like...
And then you shake it.
It's okay, fun. Yeah, it's I fun haven't for the had whole that. Family. No, that's, never had it.
That thing in your kitchen that's got the knobs on it, if you turn one of them, fire will come up. And you will find that Jiffy Pop is as much fun to make as it is to eat.
Yeah.
Grubhub and Uber Eats.
And a couple of texters, 773G, I will come over this evening and reset your life for you.
Thank you. This is a life coach that I need.
Yeah, and 630, who is the first person to be a moron? I think I was before you, wasn't I, Dean, or were you before me?
I don't know. I think we may have lived...
co-moroning?
Well, like concurrent but separate moronic lives.
That could be.
We met like two moronic ships in the night.
We crashed
oceans.
Into each other.
You didn't pass by each other.
Yeah, at first it wasn't completely different oceans, and then we crash.
That's how it worked. The first deodorant, according to one person, is pine cone. I remember that. When I was a kid, Dave, do you remember taking the car air fresheners and hanging them from your armpit hair?
Thank God. I mean,
no.
When you're on the train or the plane and somebody has really horrible BO, it's the worst.
630, I have the opposite issue. I have more toothpaste than I can use in a year. Hey, it was on sale.
Now, if you shop at Costco and Sam's Club, you can buy in bulk because you have a place to store it. But I don't have room, and I don't have room in my apartment to store in bulk.
Okay, you got three empty tubes. You can just get rid of those, and you can put three full ones.
Again, I feel for you because I have no idea how you're going to solve this problem. It's 8:22. We're going to come back in a moment, but first, what's up at 8:30?
Steve Tuch, you come.
And by the way, it's all sponsored by Ravinia.
You'll be calling his name.
All right, back to Moron Entertainment. A product of Moron International.
What is your favorite kind of pizza?
I like a thin crust pepperoni and sausage. It's a real man's pizza.
G.
Microphone.
Pepperoni and mushroom.
Pepperoni, mushroom.
Okay. What about Dave?
Margarita.
No, not booze, Dave. Pizza.
No, margarita pizza.
Oh, margarita pizza.
Mm-hmm. Yes, okay. That's the buffalo mozzarella.
Mary, what's your favorite kind of pizza?
Sausage, green pepper.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Steve?
It's probably a tie between the Luminati's classic and barbecue chicken pizza.
Oh, that's a good one.
What about you, Dean?
That's a good one. I enjoy, my favorite is when I order mushroom, green pepper, black olive.
Wow. Mm. If I didn't know better, I'd say you were Greek.
It's not that Greeky.
It's not Greeky?
Greeky.
It's not Greeky to me.
Put a little feta cheese on it on top of it.
Yeah.
A little bit
Greeky. All right, so SNL announced a few hosts, including Eddie Murphy.
Eddie Murphy, first time since 1984 that he will be hosting the show. He's just got some new projects coming out, so that's going to be something to look forward to. Also, the season will be kicked off by Woody Harrelson. He'll be host. Taylor Swift is going to be on the show.
Paid
this year.
Entirely in weed.
Well, what's wrong? You say that like there's something wrong with it.
No, not at all. Nope, it's totally fine. Totally fine. The MTV Video Awards last night outside of Sebastian Maniscalco eating it. What else happened?
That's such a nice phrase.
Well, it's a stand-up term.
Yeah. People in professional comedy. Mm-hmm. Big night for the Swiftie, for Taylor Swift. She won Best Video of the Year and Best Video for Good, which is a video which is intended for the good of others. Kind of like a message video.
Yeah.
Both for her song, You Need to Calm Down. Ariana Grande was chosen as Artist of the Year. Lil Nas X won Song of the Year for Old Town Road. And Billie Eilish was named Best New Artist of the Year.
Billie Eilish did White Wedding, right?
That, I believe, was Billy Idol.
Oh.
If I'm remembering correctly.
I need to catch up.
I stay for a white wedding.
Dave Chappelle?
Dave Chappelle has a new Netflix special that's out in which he talks about lots of things. One of the more interesting things that he talks about is that he does not believe the Michael Jackson accusers from the Leaving Neverland documentary.
How do you make that funny?
That came out. Well, he just talks about how it is, you know, a terrible time to be a celebrity, that even if you're a dead celebrity like Michael Jackson, that somebody's going to come after you. But he says he just doesn't he doesn't believe what they're saying. He thinks that they're in it for money. He also comes to the defense of Louis C.K., who was accused of inappropriate conduct with women. And Kevin Hart, who made what many people believe to be anti-gay remarks, coming to their defense that people are taking comedians too seriously, and you know, these are just jokes.
I love Chappelle, but the weakest out any comedian has is, "Hey, I was just kidding." You know, and I mean, Trump's been doing SNL for 2.5 years and getting away with nonsense. You know, you can say anything you want. It's a free country, but there's consequences to what you say. That's disappointing to hear. I'm going to have to watch that special movie.
Yeah, and it's especially disappointing. I'm reading a synopsis of it. I didn't see the special. But especially disappointing when you say that you don't believe accusers.
Right.
You know, there's a variety of reasons that these children at the time who were allegedly abused didn't say anything until they became adults. But any time that children being sexually abused is in part of the conversation, I think you really need to stop and listen carefully take it seriously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this whole idea they're in it for money.
Mm-hmm. And that documentary was powerful.
These are two guys in their, what, mid to late 30s, early 40s?
Yes, now.
Yeah. You could just see
that. So why would they cash in now? You know, they've been tormented by this forever.
Yeah, their whole life.
Well, on that happy note, what about Viola Davis?
Viola Davis? Wow, you got my note, which I sent like 2 minutes ago.
Right. Generally speaking, they're handy if they come early. But, you know.
Yeah, sometimes I like to send them right before the segment's over. If then. Viola Davis is going to be playing Michelle Obama in a Showtime movie that's going to be coming out. They're going to be doing a series on First Ladies, and Viola Davis has been signed to play Michelle Obama. We don't know who's going to play Eleanor Roosevelt yet, nor do we know who will be playing Betty Ford, some of the others that will be depicted in that. I put a pitch in for you to be Eleanor Roosevelt simply based on your Queen Elizabeth impression.
Franklin, come to the table.
I think it's very similar.
Yeah.
I think the Eleanor Roosevelt is very similar to Queen Elizabeth.
Did you notice whenever I do the voice, I have to start with, that kind of gets me into the right pitch.
As though you're being goosed.
Yeah. All right, buddy. Listen, you've done all you can here today.
I certainly have. Yes. I've done actually a little less than I probably can today.
That's my point. Let me leave you with this question.
You know what it is? I'm out of toothpaste. That's what it is.
Yeah, we need to run to the store. Who was the first person to tickle feet?
Oh.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, okay. All right, let's end on that deep thought. It's 8:33. Thank you, Dean.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
On 720 WGN.
A41, is this Prince?
Open your heart, open your mind. A train is leaving all day.
I love that little guy.
Incredibly talented.
G Suki is here. G, you don't know, but Prince and I used to hang out a little bit. And by that, I mean Prince would occasionally invite me to things at Paisley Park.
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm not kidding.
Like, for real, you're not making this up.
No.
What?
And I told this story before. We used to have long talks when I was in Minneapolis.
Yeah.
We used to have long talks where he would come into Paisley and I'd see him and I'd go, "Hey, man, good show." And he'd go, "Thank you." And he'd walk by me. So we were tight.
Well, I would have dreamed of even being within a close vicinity of someone that incredibly talented and
you ready for this? You're not ready for this.
What?
I was on stage with him.
No.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Yeah. No.
I did Purple Rain with a bunch of other people.
You did not. Yeah,
we're in the background swaying. Purple Rain.
What were you doing?
Singing.
What were you playing? You were singing?
No, we're just singing, yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So like I said, we were tight.
And after
we finished singing Purple Rain, I said, "Hey, that was cool." He said, "Thanks, man." So we had long talks. We really aired it out.
That's all he would ever have to. He wouldn't have to say anything to me.
He is the best.
Lucky you.
Tell us about our next guest, would you?
Yes. This is my very dear friend, Lolly Bowen. We have a very... Actually, you won't believe this, but we have family roots from the same small town in North Carolina. But I've known her for about 13 years. Incredibly accomplished. I truly believe prolific reporter over at the Chicago Tribune. She writes about race, poverty, Chicago's African-American community, including covering the Obama Presidential Center and Mayor Lori Lightfoot. She's also a 2017 Nieman Fellow at Harvard University, and she graduated from Harvard University. So she's written for the Trib, like I said, but also Wall Street Post, Wall Street Journal, and Lenny Letter as well.
Are you concerned she might be too smart for this show?
I'm a little worried about that, yeah, so I'm going to see how this goes.
Let's get Lolly on right now. Good morning, Lolly. How are you?
Hi, good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being on, and thanks for cutting your intellectual academic standards to join us.
But Lolly can also hang, too, so I know that she can, you know.
Now, here's the thing. About, what, a year ago, Ida B. Wells' name came up on the highway, and Ida B. Wells' name was put up in an appropriate, put up appropriately for recognizing a place in history. I don't know how many people know who Ida B. Wells was and how important she was. Do you?
Oh, yes. Well, as a journalist, of course, I knew who Ida B. Wells was because she essentially invented investigative journalism. She was a publisher. She was a writer. She was a community activist and lived right here in Bronzeville on the south side of Chicago. In Chicago, her name constantly rang out because there was a public housing complex that carried her name. And so as a result, there was a name, but not enough people knew about all her credentials and how accomplished she was and how much she risked her life in order to tell the stories of African-American men who had been unfairly and unjustly lynched. Not that there's any lynching that's just, but that had been racially mistreated in the South.
So, Lolly, you had this fascinating article last week in the Chicago Tribune talking about Ida's descendants and how it's been quite a challenge to keep her legacy alive in a way that they see fit.
Well, yes. Thank you, G, for noticing the story and giving me the opportunity to talk about it. As Steve said, a couple years ago, Ida B. Wells, her reputation and her name became more embraced publicly. In fact, there was a Twitter campaign that declared that it was Ida's time. So we got a street named for her. A major thoroughfare in Chicago was named for her. But there was also a street renamed for her on the south side in Bronzeville. There's attempts to rename a street in New York. Then a restaurant decided that it would carry her name. And so all over the country, as people learn her story, as they learn her history, they want to pay tribute to her. But right here in Chicago, we have her relatives and her descendants who say that they have now started to struggle to keep up with all of the tributes, to make sure that everything is cohesive with her vision, with her mission, with her life story. And so you have different types of tributes, organizations, murals, different uses of her name and of her image. And for her descendants, for the people who are directly related to her, they sometimes just stumble across these things or get told via social media. You know, they're not given any type of courtesy too many times, too often, not given the courtesy of being reached out to and, you know, their approval or their involvement even sought.
So this could be somebody that means well and doesn't know any better, or it could be somebody that's trying to make money off their image, and it could be something as simple as a Ida B. Wells T-shirt or, you know, in other case, Emmett Till or Fred Hampton or folks like that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think all of the descendants that I talked to, because I did talk to some relatives of Emmett Till. I did speak to the son of Fred Hampton, the Black Panther leader from the west side of Chicago. And, you know, all of them say that they think that there's possibly good intentions behind these tributes, but because they're not consulted on it, it almost comes as a slap in the face. It almost feels a little bit intrusive or insulting. And so it's something that I never pondered, what it must be like to walk down the street or to walk into a store or just to be any place in this country and see your relative's face or name, you know, on a handbag, for example, that someone is selling, or on a T-shirt, or even, you know, on a mural for a shop that's selling cell phones, right? Sure, and it's like, well, I don't know if that's what my relative would have wanted their image used for.
So what are the hopes from the family members that you talk to? What are they hoping comes from this? Or listeners, if they do notice that there is a T-shirt maybe selling an image of Ida B. Wells, should the listener then reach out to the family? Like, how can we help?
Well, can't you, just as a backup to that question, can't you protect an individual's image? You know, McDonald's has a copyright on their logo. You can't go out and use their logo and their sayings that are protected. How does a person who's famous protect themselves?
Yeah, it's kind of tricky, Steve, and that's a wonderful question, because once a person reaches a certain level of fame, their face, their portrait, their name is considered a part of the public domain. So it becomes challenging to try to, enforce any type of rules or to have any type of legal control, you know. So it's not something that you can say, you know, for example, these were iconic figures from Chicago who became really popular and known because of their social justice stance. But let's say you have a pop star like a Michael Jackson. Michael Jackson's image is pretty much everywhere,
right.
And there's nothing that their family can do because his image, his name, his persona belongs to the public image. This case gets a little tricky when you talk about what can be legally enforced. I think in this case, to answer your question, G, the family members just want the courtesy of people who want to honor their relatives to remember that these people were not just individuals, that they were people who had families, who had children, who have descendants, who have legacies, and to just pay that common courtesy of reaching out to them. And most of them are relatively easy to access because they have either foundations or organizations, and so a simple Google or Yahoo search can connect you with them. I know for Ida B. Wells, the spokesperson for the family is very visible on social media. She's on Twitter. The same for the descendants of Emmett and Mamie Till. They're also on Twitter. And so they're accessible for people who want to pay that courtesy of saying, hey, this is what I'm doing to honor your loved one.
So it's not that hard. It's not that hard. It's not that hard just to be decent about it.
Yeah.
I think it's just something that we take for granted, that we don't really think about. And so when we think about, you know, sort of revolutionary, iconic characters and people from our history, I think we just don't necessarily think that, oh, this person has a relative, and their relatives may be right here in our backyard.
Wow.
So one of the things that Fred Hampton talked a lot about is that because his father is from Chicago and from the West Side, when different events come up that kind of honor or discuss the Black Panthers, he and his mother don't even get contacted.
Right.
You know, like, it's people
bizarre.
Just completely forget right here that, you know, that his son is here, that his son is active, you know, that his son carries that legacy and is very protective of his father's legacy.
Well, Lolly, this is what I love about your work. Of course, you cover local politics, but you also find these stories that maybe we've just not thought about and we should think about. And that's so fantastic. And what are you working on next?
Oh, goodness. Well, right now I'm just looking at looking into something that's happening over at the Chicago Housing Authority. Their CEO just stepped down, and so just trying to figure out what comes next for this agency and for all the thousands of people that depend on it for a subsidized housing and affordable housing in our city.
So another light, giggly story.
So,
just another sitcom you're working on. Thanks for doing a hard look.
If he didn't tell you, now you know me well, right? Yeah. Now you know all the serious stories for me.
Well, thanks for doing the heavy lifting. It's important stuff. Appreciate you coming on.
Thank you for having me. Have a great one.
See you later.
There was a fascinating story she had a while back about how there was a wonderful tradition on the South Side in African-American families where fur coats, like vintage fur coats, were being, PETA, don't get mad, they're old fur coats, were being passed down through tradition, through the family, to keep that legacy alive. She finds stories that, you know, you just don't know that are happening.
Yeah, really, otherwise wouldn't be covered.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, she's finding the real stories.
There you go.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show. I know you want to leave me.
You know, I think of this every time I hear this song.
What?
That scene from The Big Chill where they're cleaning up after Thanksgiving dinner.
I'm going to admit something.
Never seen The Big Chill?
I just have to be honest about that.
Oh, you got to see The Big Chill. It's a great movie.
What happens in The Big Chill?
Big Chill is about a bunch of hippies. No, mm-hmm. Big Chill, well, kind of, actually is. It's about a bunch of people that went to college together at the University of Michigan. Joe, you want to jump in at the University of Michigan? You want to throw something in there for your Big Blue?
Go Blue, baby.
There you go.
Yeah, you remember that? I didn't remember what college it was.
Yeah, they went to the University of Michigan together.
Go Blue.
They get together for a funeral.
Okay.
Of a friend who kills himself.
Oh.
And they end up reminiscing and
okay,
talking about how screwed up their lives are.
Is it a comedy? Is it sing a lot?
Comedy, drama to some extent, I suppose.
Romance, okay, a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit of romance.
Mm-hmm. Well, it definitely hit one your
them,
heart.
One of them went on to be like a Tom Selleck, Magnum P.I. type character in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
Another one was a Vietnam veteran who was injured and could no longer sexually perform. That's an undercurring theme in the movie. One was a doctor. They're all successful. And the folks that lived in South Carolina, where they all convened, the guy owned a bunch of sneaker stores before it was hip to
those. What was the takeaway from The Big Chill? What do you remember learning from watching
Friends
it?
Matter. Friends matter, and over the course of your life, make a better effort to stay in touch with friends. Don't let funerals and weddings bring you together. Work harder to maintain friendship.
And have you, Steve Cochran, done such?
I used to. Yeah, I need to see The Big Chill again to remind me.
You know what I'm realizing? It's kind of like A Million Little Things.
Yes, it is.
It's very similar.
Yes,
I wonder
it
if they
is.
Based it on that, kind of.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
I hadn't thought about that, but you're right.
Yeah.
And the movie has music throughout. It's one of the greatest soundtracks of all time. But that scene is when they're cleaning up after dinner. But it wasn't Thanksgiving, right? Or was it Thanksgiving weekend when they were there?
I don't think so. I don't remember.
I feel like it was a big dinner, lunch, brunch thing. The only thing I didn't like about it is the ending. Okay. I want to ruin it for you?
Go ahead.
It's a 35-year-old movie, so. The ending of the movie, the doctor friend, I think she's a doctor, she might be a social worker, she doesn't have a relationship in her life, and she's getting older, and she's worried about having children.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, sounds like my life and everybody else's, every other woman that I know right now in my friend circle.
Glenn Close.
I didn't like that party.
I didn't like this. Glenn Close, the wife, who has previously had an affair with a guy that killed himself,
uh-huh,
who is best friends with her husband, she, in some sort of weird way of leveling the playing field and helping her friend, encourages the friend and her husband to get together so the friend can impregnate her.
Whoa. Yeah. I can't believe you remembered all of that.
That's a great movie.
I'm the person that looks up the ending of a movie before I go and see it. I want to know.
So you Google spoiler alert?
Absolutely, because I can't handle the anxiety. I don't need to be surprised.
I understand it.
I like to be told.
No, I understand it.
Yeah.
312-91-7200. Who's the first person to whatever? How about an inflatable twister board that the whole family can jump on? I'll get you that coming up. Things you don't need, but you'll probably spend money on. It's a new feature I just came up with just now. But first at 9 o'clock, we'll come back with your news in just a moment from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Remember The Clash? Dave, you used to bang your head to The Clash.
I remember The Clash. I wasn't really a headbanger.
How did I know that was going to be the answer?
I'm just thinking this would be good for your next lawn party. You know, you like to have people over for a barbecue.
I was trying to get G to buy this when she goes out to buy toothpaste today. It's a giant twister board, an inflatable twister board. It's 5 meters by 5 meters. That's 15 feet by 15 feet, and it's inflatable, and you can play Twister on it. Come on, it sounds like fun. Who's in for the giant inflatable Twister board?
I am.
No, not me.
Really?
No.
Are we going to do it here?
Sure, we can do it here.
I mean, that's just awkward.
Twister?
Yeah.
That's a great way to meet friends. Did you ever play Connect Four when you were a kid?
Yes, love Connect Four.
How about a 4 foot tall, 4 foot wide Connect Four game?
Okay, that's good. Like, what happens when you, like, do the thing, the slidey thing at the bottom, and then all the chips fall out?
Super loud.
Yeah. That was my favorite part.
$200. Giant chessboard, like a life size chessboard, 10 by 10 feet. Each piece of the chessboard is 2 feet tall.
Don't, like, rich people have that, like, in their gardens?
Yeah, this is something you can play on your lawn, $125. How about giant Jenga? There's lots of different versions of giant Jenga.
Jenga is great.
Jenga, you have these chunks of wood that look like they came from a Home Depot.
Like they look like a fireplace log?
They're huge.
I've seen them at bars now.
Giant Jenga?
Yeah, they have one of bar by my house.
I love the giant Jenga.
And the kids love to go and play there.
There's this really cute viral dog that plays Jenga on, just Google it. It's the cutest dog.
$110 for your giant Jenga. You want a giant yard dice so you can play a giant illegal dice game in your yard?
No, because I think that might hurt somebody.
$50. They're made out of wood. Giant wood dice. How about giant bowling? Huge bowling pins and a bowling ball.
I love bowling.
You don't bowl.
I do too bowl. I love bowling. I used to have my own bowling ball.
You have your own shoes?
Yes, I did.
Are you on a league?
I was not in a league. I've always dreamed of being in the league. I love the Big Lebowski movie. That was my inspiration.
Did you have a bowling shirt?
That's awesome.
I did not have a... I've always wanted a bowling shirt. Actually,
what about shoes? Did you have your own bowling shoes?
I did have my own bowling shoes. I did.
I always rent.
Yeah, and have you ever gotten on an elevator when you're leaving a bowling alley and you have the rental shoes still on?
Because you forgot to get your original shoes back and Patrick Kane looked at you and went, Steve, maybe take the shoes
back.
That
happened to you?
Uh-huh.
You have two cool stories today. The Prince story and the Patrick Kane and the elevator
story.
Barely
scratching the surface.
Oh, my goodness. You're a celebrity.
Oh, it's huge.
Hobnobbing with the celebrities.
I can't go anywhere.
Oh, my goodness.
How about a giant deck of cards?
No.
Huge cards that you could play, like solitaire in your yard and look really sad.
No. Oh, that would
shuffle them.
Really be depressing.
That's a good point. Giant ring toss for the pool. Giant beer pong. Beer pong with huge buckets.
Let's ride. I'm in.
You ready?
I'm very good at beer pong, actually.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Giant checkers to go with your giant chess set. This one's funny. Giant foosball. Nobody sells this, but somebody made it. It's wood walls all the way around, bars across, and you are the foosball players.
That's actually pretty cool.
But you have to slide back and forth on the bar with your hands on the bar to play the game.
Mm-hmm.
You can't move from there. It's pretty funny, actually.
But you don't go upside down, do you?
No. It depends. I mean, you can do a whole gymnast thing. How about a giant Kerplunk game? Remember Kerplunk?
No.
Kerplunk is where you would have these pickup sticks crossing each other in this circle, and then balls are on top of the pickup sticks, and you would pull the sticks out and try not to knock all the balls down.
And I've never heard of Kerplunk. I can't even say it.
What do you think? I'm making it up? Come
on. It sounds like what it happens when you go Kerplunk.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. $67, which is a weird price. A giant flip cup drinking game with huge cups. Cups that are as huge as people. And then you try to flip the cups like you would in a bar.
That sounds like it'd hurt someone.
It could hurt somebody.
Like silo cups.
And what a stupid way to be injured. There's giant cornhole. A giant beach ball would be fun. This giant beach ball is 12 feet in diameter.
Wow.
It's $150.
Well, everybody
takes you 6 weeks to blow it up.
Well, everyone's about the really cool, like, floaty inflatables for the pool.
Mm-hmm.
Like a unicorn. You can get a giant pizza. You can get a donut.
How about a wall-sized Scrabble board?
I would love that.
Me
I love
too.
Scrabble.
Yeah.
And you play stand-up wall-sized Scrabble.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The intellectuals game, I see.
Oh, like you'd be like a Vanna White because they would like light up or something?
No, you think these look like felt letters that you would stick to the wall.
Very nice.
Yeah.
I bet Dave is always trying to make up words.
Yeah. Did you detect a little sort of, I don't know, I mean, gee, you don't have a problem with Scrabble, do you? You kind of said it with a little sneer, kind of.
She had a Scrabble incident. She doesn't want to talk
about
it.
Yeah, I guess.
You know what? I've just been told one too many times that my word wasn't in the dictionary.
A little bitter?
Yeah.
A little bitter. It's 9:17. Steve, what's coming up? Oh, well, hold on, Steve. Hold that thought. 1 second. Hold that thought. Stand by, Steve. Jan, hello.
Hi. Hey, listen. Whoever put you guys together, G and you, Steve, they're pure genius. You guys work so well together.
Oh, that's nice. Thank you.
I mean, I'm sitting here laughing half the time. You guys are phenomenal.
Ah, you're the best. Thank you for calling. I appreciate that very much.
Thank you, Jan. We have to send her check in the mail.
Viv, give her one of Rose's cars.
That was so sweet.
Isn't that nice?
You planted her, didn't you?
Totally unnecessary call, but very nice.
Very sweet.
And when I say unnecessary, I mean call often and compliment us.
She has such a nice voice. I bet you she's a wonderful person.
I bet she's a good person. I bet she takes care of puppies and likes rainbows.
I know she's fantastic.
And she's a great Scrabble player.
And she's a great American.
I love her.
We love Jan. It's 9:18. Too much?
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
On 720 WGN.
9:22. You know, it turns out G's got a bunch of brushes with celebrities, too. What's yours?
I told you in the commercial break.
Well, you didn't tell the audience.
Well, I don't want people to think I drink too much because I was playing beer pong.
No, that's Dave.
Now, see, this is finally we've got someone on the show
who's just as much of a lush as you are.
I didn't say just as much.
Oh, really?
I'm not.
That's why we're kindred spirits. I mean, I do enjoy a nice...
Dave loves kindred spirits as long as they've had time to
to kindred.
Yeah.
I mean, I do enjoy a nice glass of wine. I love food. Pairs well with food.
Okay.
I enjoy beer.
So
I enjoy cocktails.
And that takes you to a big old game of beer pong with who?
Oh, Charlie Day.
Charlie Day.
Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Who is
Charlie? Charlie Day. Horrible Bosses.
Yes.
Charlie
so
Day.
Funny.
He's
so
very funny.
Cute. See, I think he's a person whose charm and wittiness. He might not be the most drop dead gorgeous man in the world, but he's so charming and lovely that he's
hilarious.
Yeah,
I love Charlie.
That makes him sexy.
Now, how'd you meet him?
Well, no, I mean, he was on the show I worked on before. So
you played beer pong on Windy City Live?
Yes, yeah. And I beat him.
What kind of a TV show was that?
And I beat him.
I get it.
I was trying to impress him.
Okay, Captain Competitive, I get it.
I won, Steve.
I beat him.
But I was trying to...
Damn it, listen.
But I was trying to impress him. But then I thought, well, is this a way to impress a guy playing beer pong well? I don't think it's a good way.
I don't know. He probably is telling the same story about you this morning somewhere.
I just hope he remembers me. He doesn't remember me. Are you kidding?
No. Listen, I love Charlie Day. I wish they'd do a Horrible Bosses 3. Did you see Horrible Bosses?
I loved a Horrible Bosses.
Hilarious.
Jennifer Aniston was unbelievable.
Horrible Bosses 2 was a decent sequel. It wasn't great, but
yeah.
It was a decent sequel.
Oh, my goodness. It's so funny.
Here's the worst segue of the day. So anyway, this Jeffrey Epstein guy, he's got a hearing today, a court hearing in New York. And in case you didn't know if you should, really despise the guy, more and more stories are coming out now about him. A New York Times reporter exited the paper after disclosing he was given a $30,000 donation from Epstein. A donation. Epstein was the source and subject of his profiles. The donation was for a favorite nonprofit. But there were other media-like tactics prior to Epstein's suicide. When he was editor-in-chief at Vanity Fair, Graydon Carter assigned Vicki Ward to write a profile of Epstein. This goes all the way back to 2002. In 2003, Epstein was waiting alone for Graydon Carter in Vanity Fair's office, where he pleaded with and prodded Carter to leave out any mention of Epstein's interest in very young women. Soon after the unflattering profile was published without on-the-record accounts of abuse of an underage girl, Carter found a bullet outside his door. He and Connolly considered it a warning from Epstein. 2006, when Connolly started digging around for an article on Epstein's relationships with young women, Carter found a severed cat's head at his front door.
No.
Yeah.
That.
None of it directly attributable to Epstein, but it only made sense that it came from him because of the timing and because of the atmosphere.
Horrifying.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we already knew he was a terrible, terrible person, but...
One Epstein accuser gave a tape the other day to ABC News, which didn't run after getting a warning call from Epstein's lawyer and friend, Alan Dershowitz. And he just went on and on and on.
The awful thing is he got away with it for so long, and there were so many people that knew about it and covered for him and helped him. And
I'd like to be a better person, but there's part of me that couldn't be happier that his last few days on this earth were miserable. Because I'm not that good a guy.
Well, I just wish that he could have, you know, faced his accusers.
Yeah, they deserve that. They didn't get that. 312-981-7200. Texters, phone calls, you know the drill. 926. And we'll come back with you. Oh, we don't have any breaks. All right, well, I'm going to continue right here.
Well,
then.
And the girlfriend was horrible. Whoever this girlfriend...
Well, that's the thing. This girl, this woman...
Ghislaine Maxwell.
Yeah, Ghislaine, is that how you pronounce it? We never know how to pronounce it. Ghislaine Maxwell, she needs to be brought in. I don't know what the holdup here is. I mean, I know they're building a case on her, but she's the one that has all the answers. Isn't there a chance she's going to run away? I'm sure they have an eye on her, but come on. Meanwhile, south of the border, the Amazon fires continue. We're working on, Viv, what was that foundation that I said we ought to get somebody on from? Save the Amazon? Amazon, I can't think of the name of it. But there's a worldwide organization that works on literally saving the Amazon. And we're going to get somebody on as soon as tomorrow from there to talk about it. If you missed it earlier, the Amazon fires continue and the political nonsense over it continues as well.
I don't want to depress you even more, but you've heard, too, that now there are even more fires burning in Angola and the Congo in Africa, which is the second lung for the world.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's burning on two continents. It's the earth is weeping.
The Amazon rainforest has a man-made fire season each year. There's an uptick in blazes around the time as farmers and cattle ranchers have long used fire to clear land and make it ready for use. This year there's been a drastic increase in the volume of fires, partly because it's been supported by those running the countries where the Amazon rainforest is. The peak day this month, 700% more fires were burning than over the past 15 years. And political leadership there is essentially turned down. For instance, Brazil's president, Jair Bolsonaro, has turned down a G7 agreement to send money there. Something like $20 million. The richest countries in the world came up with $20 million. Now, $20 million is a lot of money. It's not a lot of money to stop this fire.
Where are all the billionaires that have all the money to burn? I mean, you think about Ted Turner, when he bought all that property and land out in Montana.
Sure.
To preserve the land because he knew the federal government wasn't going to protect it.
It shouldn't be up to Bill Gates and it shouldn't be up to Warren Buffett, but it may have to be. It shouldn't be up to Oprah.
Yeah, where are all the billionaires who came to the rescue after the Paris, after the Notre Dame burned?
Yeah, but yeah, so according to...
I think there was $900 million raised in a week for building, rebuilding Notre Dame. $20 million for the rainforest.
I just think we're so out of sight, out of mind. If it's not present and clear danger right in front of us, people don't think about the future. But you got to think about the next generations and the people that can't think about the environment because they're too busy taking care of more immediate needs. But we can do better, and so we should do better. We're in a place to do better.
The deforestation photography is awful. I mean, just scorched land for miles and miles and miles.
Well, then when you start looking at the stuff in Africa, too, it's horrible. Brazil is actually third in the world in wildfires over the last 48 hours.
And it's not getting better until it does. And you know, it's not exactly where you can start a war with Brazil to actually get in and stop the fires. They have to be cooperative.
Well, yeah, it's just this whole problem of how do we, as a developed, very wealthy country, tell a country that's trying to, you know...
Honestly, I think you take it out of the climate change argument because there's too many people who can go, there is no climate change, and they can have their crazy argument. So you just appeal with logic, and the logic is we know how important the rainforest is.
Right.
So therefore, we have to protect the rainforest. What do you need from us to help you protect it?
And it's compensating the farmers and the ranchers that are, you know, needing that land for their livelihood. Right. Because they can't, but, you know, if they're going to weigh, you know, feeding their families, you know, in the immediate future versus... our concerns.
Sure.
Like, a, you know, rich America's concerns and the Western world's concerns.
Yeah,
like, it's not going to...
Yeah. The truth is not out there.
Like, and who are we to tell them?
But what kills me is the long shot thinking here. I mean, yeah, I understand that point, that they have to feed their families in the immediate, but they may not have any life to live if they don't think more long term down the road.
True, but
they may not have the land to live on.
Yeah, but it's an education issue. It's a policy issue. It's an immediacy issue. Like, I mean, I'm not going to tell, I mean, you know.
Well, you need political cooperation to inform the people it's a problem.
They need to be compensated,
and
for
Bolsonaro
sure.
Bolsonaro just got into office.
Yeah, and it doesn't help to have a completely corrupt president.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
You know, I've never told you this before, but I used to get dropped off from the school bus at my grandmother's house. And sometimes there'd be some James Brown coming out of the speakers. And I go up to the front door, and I was hungry. I wanted a snack. But the sign on the door said, if James Brown is rocking, don't come knocking. I have to go to the neighbors.
Never heard that story before.
I wasn't
Steve
Cochran
Show, where jokes get beaten into the ground over and over again. This, by the way, is show number 1,438. That's the 1,438th time I've said that. Ross Cochran's here. Hi, son.
Hi.
Are you happy to be here?
I'm always happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Let's have a family meeting first. My favorite new little guy?
Isaac is great. He is, thank you all for the love and support, but he is a super sweet kid. Abigail loves being a big sister. I think, you know, might feel differently when he starts stealing her toys and that kind of thing. But for now, he is this cute little plaything.
1 month old tomorrow.
Yeah.
How about that?
Big already? Party planned.
Oh, my
gosh. There'll be a parade down Michigan. It'll be this whole thing.
Here's the weird thing. At the 1 month old party, you still have to get goodie bags for the other 1 month olds. And nobody remembers anything.
So, Ross, what was the advice that your seasoned, wise father gave you about fatherhood?
Oh, sure.
You better be able to think of something.
Yeah. So I was on, here's an example of the advice that I get. So I was on the swim team, as a kid, and my father would tell me before I was swimming, go, hey, don't drown.
That's good advice.
The advice I got as a for being a father was a little bit different. But one of the biggest things was when you have a baby, you as dad, you can't, there's not, a, you know, you're kind of second place, right? The baby needs mom. So dad, in the thing that Pops always told me was like, just be there. And eventually, something will click and you'll become the favorite plaything. And that's already happened with Abigail. So about 3 years until that is the same truth.
I actually saw this. I don't think you saw this the other day, but we did a FaceTime call and Abigail was going to bed. She's doing the big girl bed now. And she was going to bed and she was actually frustrated with her father.
Oh. Yes, she was.
It was telling her something. She goes, okay, Dada.
Yeah. She's like, yeah.
Does she call you Dada?
Well, a lot of time, yeah.
Oh, it's love that. Yeah. It sounds very fancy.
It's very fancy. She's
Dada?
A very fancy kid. Yeah.
Dada, don't languages. Be.
She's at preschool right now, so it's all a big change.
How about that? Man. All right, Let It Be Us. Let It Be Us is an organization that does what?
We change the vision and outcome of children in foster care in the state of Illinois.
And we're a mess when it comes to foster care.
Yeah, it's not great. So by every measurable metric for children in foster care, we rank last. Permanency is the word that we use for that. So by getting children back into their families where they came from, we rank last. By identifying kin care, other family members or other people who are already in those children's lives, we rank last. And then that's how you create this sort of stereotype system of children bouncing from home to home to home.
Do you know why we're last? I mean, does it matter why we're last? I guess it doesn't matter. We just shouldn't be last.
Yeah. Honestly, that's kind of where I'd try to stress a lot of these conversations, is because I think people hear, you know, these big, huge problems that the system has. And I'm more focused on how that can be addressed. And I really believe that Let It Be Us is uniquely positioned to help this system look a lot different and help this state look a lot different because of it.
Now, in a short time, you've worked with Let It Be Us. You've learned a lot, but you've also brought them, you know, your own stuff to the game. And one of those is you're now a party planner.
I Yeah, a little bit. So we have our upcoming golf outing on September 9th at Hawthorne Woods.
It's a great golf course. Great golf course.
Super excited to be there. It's our fifth one. We're 5 years old. We've had a golf outing every year. And we're really looking forward to the event. It's one of our biggest fundraisers, but it's also one of the biggest chances to kind of gather the community together for people who have been consistent supporters and there since day one helping us do this work.
So foursomes cost how much?
Foursomes are $1,000.
All right. That's pretty cheap for a golf outing.
Okay.
Really is. And you can still get those?
Yes. So you can still, if you go to letitbeus.org, on our events page, you can see the golf outing, and we'll also, it'll be on Cochran Show social media, so that might be easier for you guys to find it there too.
Will you be doing a meet and greet out there for people?
I'm going to do, well, it's golf, so I'm going to do a meet and curse. Like, yeah. I'll hook one into the rough, and then I'll meet you, shake your hand, and curse because I hooked one into the rough.
We could give some golf tips, too.
Well, I'm going to MC the thing after.
Yes, so...
And by the way, this will be the only year I'll MC it, because I'll MC it this time, and then Ross will go, I got a pups.
Well, he has to ask you. I've heard that he likes to be invited.
Yes, no, he's... yeah, but this one, he better show up, because we're using him on a lot of marketing materials.
And here's the thing. I do show up, and if I have one gift in life... I'm really good at taking money from rich people.
Yeah, that is it. So that is definitely a skill.
All right, so here's the thing. One of the generous donors happens to be someone that you and I know well.
Yes.
And I don't know if we can say his name, but it rhymes with Craig. And Craig bought a foursome for us to put up for auction.
Yes.
So we can do this now on the air and over social media, yes?
Yes. So the way it's going to work, if you go to letitbeus.org/donate and give any amount... from now, between Friday morning, we'll cut it off Friday at 10. Whoever gives the largest donation is going to win have the chance to golf with you.
But here's the thing. If you want to bring three of your friends and you don't want to golf with me, you could also do that. You're not going to hurt my feelings.
Yes.
So
you win the opportunity, whether or not you take it.
So it's either a twosome, because Mark Slaby from the Patriot Education Fund
is very tentatively committed, and I haven't gotten that from him yet, so thanks for putting him on the spot.
So Mark Slaby and I will join you, and so it's you and a friend, or you and three of your friends. You're not going to offend me if you want to bring three of your friends.
Yes.
But you could golf with me or not golf with me. Frankly, that may bring in more money. Mm-hmm. If you want to not golf with me, that could be a big winner. And again, how do they donate?
So just go to Let It Be.
And it's not a commitment to donate, even though you should. You're bidding.
You're bidding on the chance to have the foursome. So you can give $5, you can give $10. I would actually really encourage WGN listeners, people who have always been alongside everything that I've done in my entire life, to look at becoming a what we call a child welfare warrior. That is our monthly support team. And those people are not only staying in front of the work that we're doing 12 times a year by giving monthly, but they're also staying in front of these the children that we're helping. So one of the big sort of systemic problems that happens for these kids in care is they wind up sort of becoming invisible. And by becoming a child welfare warrior, a monthly supporter of Let It Be Us, you're combating against that issue.
All right. So when we come back, I want you to knock down a couple myths that are out there.
Sure.
A couple of things that keep people from going into foster care.
Love it.
All right, stand by. That's Ross Cochran. He's the guest. It's 9:45. Also, last chance for you to get in our text question, Dave. Who's the first person to think of that?
Think of that.
312-981-7200.
By the way, Ross has already asked me to MC next year.
Yes.
Wow. I did
burn.
Not see, I did not see that coming. 312-981-7200 texters.
It's the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Ross Cochran is here. Ross, what's your title at Let It Be Us?
I am the Director of Resource and Development.
And Let It Be Us, again, trying to take care of foster kids in this state, promoting foster care to adoption. The website for you guys is?
Letitbeus.org.
Letitbeus.org/donate will mean you are first in. Look, $1,000 for a foursome for this golf outing is cheap. I'm telling you. I know the prices that these golf outings charge in various places, and they're all great charities. But this money goes where?
Great question. So we have three sort of proprietary programs that we use for our work. So the biggest thing people know us for is the Heart Gallery. So the Heart Gallery, every state has a version of a Heart Gallery. It's the photo listing service of children who are in the state who are available for adoption. So right now we have approximately 45 or so children who are there. Who
so you can see a kid's face in their profile.
Get to know them a little bit. And then potentially, you know, we work with DCFS with that so that, you know, if someone comes in through our website, they're working with DCFS after that to see if it's a good match, to see if they could wind up adopting these kids. So by supporting Let It Be Us, you're supporting our effort in bringing these children to people who otherwise may not have known about them. The other program that we have is our targeted recruitment, which is kind of like the thing that we're probably most well known for. So in 5 years of existence, we've helped over 200 children who were in emergent situations, heading towards a shelter most often, or who, for whatever reason, were difficult to place. We have helped identify homes that they can ultimately thrive in. So quick example, out in Dixon, Illinois, we had a caseworker call us because they were out. They had kids who were coming into care, and they had nowhere for them to go. They had no open beds. They had nobody in the pipeline. We ran a Facebook ad. As simple as running a Facebook ad, we found homes that they weren't aware of, as well as found, I'm pretty sure the number was 15 or so new prospective foster parents who are going to be in their pipeline.
And that's a good day at work.
It's a very good day at work, and it helps literally solve a community's issue, because what happens is these children come into foster care. So McHenry County, as an example, 37% of the children who come into McHenry County wind up going outside of McHenry County because there's not enough foster homes in McHenry County. So you think about all the trauma that goes with a kid going into foster care to begin with, and then you compound that trauma by pushing them away from school, pushing them away from maybe whatever the one source of stability is in their life, and wind up, you know, having them in a brand new environment. And that trauma begins to become a cycle that becomes even more challenging to stop.
All right, so let's knock down some myths. I can't role play this thing. I can't be a foster parent because it costs too much money for me and I don't have the money.
Great question. Yeah. So foster care in the state is free. Illinois, you know, the joke is that this is one of the things that Illinois has gotten really right. There's no financial burden associated with foster care. So including going through all the way through adoption, you can wind up doing this entire thing without having any financial burden on you.
Because you're helping not just humanity, but you're doing something the state desperately needs, and that's more good families to come into the system.
Yeah, because so Illinois is down somewhere between 20-25% in total foster homes. And every year, there's 18,000 children who are in care right now. And every year, that number has gone up by about 1,000.
18,000 kids who don't have homes.
Yeah.
That's a city.
Yes. And there's 400,000 in the country. So you think about, you know, one of the things that I think, again,
and they've done nothing wrong. These are just kids who came from just kids who are broken kids. Homes or kids for whatever reason. They don't have families.
Yeah. So, you know, you think about, like, the thing that solves that, right? It's effectively, it's a marketing issue and it's a recruiting issue. And that's where Let It Be Us comes in, because we're able to find children, find homes for these children to thrive in, and bring awareness to this issue, bring awareness to these kids, to communities like WGN listeners who otherwise may not have known about it.
All right, now I don't want to be crass here, but this is the best way to cut to the chase. I can't bring a foster kid into my house because these kids are screwed up and I don't know what they're going to do or say.
Yeah. So you will go through 39 hours of training to become a foster parent. And the most, and by far, you know, we would love to have you at the golf outing. We would love to have you support our work. By far, the biggest thing that you can do for these kids, the best thing you can do for these kids, is become a foster parent and to start the process to get your license. Because we know that, you know, for example, almost 50% of girls who age out of the system, so by the time they're age 19 in most cases, have had some sort of pregnancy. We know that that number is, you know, close to 80% for the boys who age out of the system, who have some sort of interaction with the criminal justice system. And yet, by putting those children in families, we know that those numbers go significantly, you know, astronomically down.
Sure.
Right? So these kids who are coming into care, these children who are in care, they are products of a lot of trauma and a lot of the time. But often what these kids need is just somebody to show up for them. They just need somebody who's able to step up for them. And that training will help. Let It Be Us will help. We love equipping new foster parents so that they feel ready for whatever foster care is going to throw at them. And at the end of the day, you know, foster care is hard, but we as adults, we have, you know, friends, churches, bars, right? And we have ways to cope. These kids don't have another option. So it's on us as adults to step up for these kids.
And this 39 hours of training will equip you in ways you haven't even thought of to be able to handle this situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, if you've been a parent before, one of the things that Lauren and I found really helpful for, because we're foster parents, I sometimes feel like I'm in one of those 80s infomercials where I'm like, I'm not just the president, I'm also a client.
And congratulations on your hair.
But so we, you know, we had Abigail, but we learned a lot about how to care for a child who's been through trauma, right? And we have a lot of people who are coming into wanting this to be the way that they start their family. So you learn what it's like to be a parent.
Yeah, and one of the foster kids you had, and I don't know if I'm violating anything here, so I'm going to be careful.
Okay.
But a baby who was very young.
Yes.
Who had been in a number of homes. Oh, and to see Abigail at 2.5, probably at that point, maybe 3.
He was 8 weeks and had been moved 8 times.
Yeah, yeah. 8 weeks, 8 different homes. And to see Abigail be able to see that love given to a stranger in your house, that's a big deal, too. All right, so give me another myth that you hear all the time.
The process is too big, or the process takes too long, or it's essentially too hard.
Right.
And the thing I go back to, you know, yes, it is challenging. And yes, you are dealing with a big system issue, and getting your license can take 4 months sometimes, or 6 months sometimes, or sometimes even longer. But it is worth it, because you not only are you doing, you know, you loving a kid, right? But it, at the end of the day, like, if you can be a parent, you can be a foster parent.
Are there parameters you're looking for in foster parents? Is there a certain age? Should they have kids? Should they not have kids?
Thank you for asking that. No. So there are no parameters. There's no age restrictions. You know, somebody might be listening to this who might be saying that they're too old to be a foster parent.
What if they're gay?
You are not too old to be a foster parent. There's no restrictions on sexuality, orientation, religion, anything like that.
If you're single?
If you're single, there's absolutely no restrictions. The example we always use for that, it's a little bit more on the tragic side, but you have, we helped a girl who had been abused by every man in her life, every family member, every man in her life. She is thriving for probably close to 6 months, almost a year now, because she's in a home with a single mom, and she's finally able to feel like she's safe. But you know, it's a little bit crass, right? But there's 18,000 children who are in care in the state of Illinois, right? The house is on fire. Grab a bucket. I don't care what color your bucket is. Right, I don't care how big your bucket is. Right, I don't care if you want to do this as a respite care where you do it for a couple weeks, or you want to do this for the rest of your life. Grab a bucket.
Everybody helps.
What about if you both work in the family?
Yeah, great question. Parents. So the Illinois and DCFS is very helpful with providing caregivers, daycare, that they will subsidize the cost for in a lot of cases. So your caseworker, the person who's actually helping that child and is there, who follows that child on their journey as a child in care, will help you with a lot of that. But the thing that I also say to that with to answer your question, Mary, is people, you learn how to figure it out. So, you know, using David Hochberg as an example, right? When I was working on Team Hochberg, and we had a child in care, David was very clear of just like, go figure it out. Mm-hmm. You can go be there. You will be surprised at the community that will surround
what
you.
What about physical space? Do you have to have a bedroom per child? Like, how does that work?
Totally. Great question. So you get, you as the individual or you as the couple get licensed, but they are also looking at the home, right? So there are certain restrictions on how much space each child has. It does not have to be a bedroom per child, but there are parameters on, you know, what qualifies as a bed and what doesn't.
If you foster a kid, do you have to adopt the child?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
And actually, frankly, you know, the start of this process is always towards reunification. So,
yeah, that's the ultimate goal. But the unification wants to happen in a healthy way.
Yes.
Can the ages be picked to some extent, or the duration of the stay?
Yeah. So what will happen is you will work with your caseworker when you get licensed to essentially lay out your preferences. Right. I would encourage you, if this is something you're thinking about, to get your license as wide as possible, because you don't know what the journey is going to look like. This is a marathon, not a sprint. However, you will be able to say, you know, Lauren and I said we were going to be more comfortable with a child who's younger than Abigail. That's not always been the case. We had children who are older, but you are able to say that preferences, and having a good relationship with your caseworker makes those preferences easier to manage.
60 plus years of age. I have a 4-year-old. This is a texter, and a 3-year-old. Just wanted to reaffirm there's no financial hardship for being a foster parent. 815, what are you doing? The kids you are fostering don't want to stay with you because the adoption process takes too long. The children have a direct communication with a caseworker, yes?
Yeah. So, two things with that. Yes, the process takes long, but it's important to find those ways for that child to understand why it's happening. And the caseworker and the other, you know, professionals who are there are going to be super beneficial to you to use them as a resource for that whole journey.
There's a million other questions,
yeah,
and not enough time to handle them, so you'll be back for this. But let's make sure we mention again, the golf outing.
Yes.
Is when?
September 9th at Hawthorne Woods.
1 week from next Monday.
Yeah, starts at noon, cocktails at 5.
And you could buy a foursome?
Day cocktails at 5.
You could buy a foursome?
Gee, cocktails at 5.
Yes.
You could buy a foursome at what website?
So letitbeus.org/events, and the golf outing is the first one there.
Or you could donate and get the foursome because you were generous in donating. Now, the foursomes cost $1,000. I think you ought to start by going $2,000, but who am I to push?
Any amount will qualify you for this.
Yeah, and so
you
can start bidding now.
Bid to golf with you.
Yes, or if you don't want me to play, bid more. And then you can get all, you know, I mean, you can either take a foursome or a twosome. The twosome is with me and somebody else. A foursome is you and three of your pals. You won't offend me.
No.
Just as you know what will offend me? If you don't bid enough. So letitbeus.org/donate.
Yes.
All right. Great to see you, buddy.
Good to see you.
Love you. Thanks for being a great dad yourself. A phenomenal dad.
Yeah.
Next time, bring the baby.
Yeah. Learn from a good dad.
We love you, Russ, but bring the baby.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that are very upset that you didn't bring either kid in.
Yeah, no.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So nice to see where you rank now. I used to get that when you were a kid.
Uh-huh.
It's, and it was my show. It's a minute before 10. More in a moment on 720 WGN. Just wanted to give you a second there to collect your thoughts.
I was wondering what was happening.
All right, we got to do this quickly now. Bill and Wendy are here, but just the last.
You're
going to
cry, Steve. Don't get all emotional.
My man has. Remember when Sammy Davis Jr. said this? My man has a throat.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. A
couple of last minute texts here on who is the first person to think you could nuke a hurricane? Who was the first person to propose with a diamond ring? Really stupid idea. No bitterness there.
Brilliant idea.
I like the idea.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
Who was the first person to be circumcised voluntarily? Who was the first person to look at a toad and think, I wonder if I lick it, it might have hallucinogenic properties? Who was the first person to put a ship together in a bottle? I would say the person that licked the toad.
Same guy.
Yeah, it would have to be. And finally, who was the first person to think a grown man should dye his hair reddish blonde and have a comb over and it would fool anybody? There you go. Who was the first person to? Thank you for all your texts all morning long. What are you guys doing today?
Steve, there's a horse controversy in town. Are you aware of this?
I'm not.
What?
About the horse-driven carriages that are going around in the city.
Oh.
Some people want them stopped immediately.
Why? Because they stink?
Oh.
They say it's cruel to the horses.
Okay.
Well, we're going to have a horse on to ask him his thoughts.
Have the horses complained?
Yeah, some of the horses are complaining.
Why the long face, Mr. Ed? Say tomorrow.